Will Guyatt, and I've got all the details.
And how were you affected? Meanwhile, the revelations just keep on coming. That book concerning Virginia Giuffre is out. Amy Wallace co-authored Nobody's Girl. She told the BBC last night.
I know that she would view it as a victory, that he was forced, in, by whatever means, to voluntarily give them up.
A victory for common sense? The ludicrous Graham Linehan case collapses as the police say they will stop investigating non-crime hate after the case.
I'm not even sure if it is the law. I think we're suing the police for wrongful arrest and false imprisonment.
Plus, blind people who have a microchip inserted in the back of their eyeball can suddenly see again. Details of that remarkable health breakthrough. Those stories and more, it's after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, supporters of Maccabi Tel Aviv won't be able to buy tickets for their tie at Aston Villa next month. The Israeli club have decided to decline any allocation, despite ministers' efforts to overturn a ban on their fans attending the Europa League tie. They say the original decision by local officials in Birmingham has created a toxic atmosphere. The Culture Secretary, Lisa Nandy, told MPs yesterday it was the wrong move.
In any situation, there is a risk that must be assessed. But in this case, the risk this event presents is in no small part down to the risk inherent in where the away fans come from and who they are. It is in that context that the solution that is proposed to exclude a group from attending is wrong.
The government says it's deeply saddened by Maccabi Tel Aviv's decision. Ministers are under renewed pressure to formally remove Prince Andrew's dukedom. Andrew, who denies wrongdoing, voluntarily gave up his titles last week ahead of the publication of his accuser, Virginia Giuffre's memoir. The SNP has submitted a motion calling for a change in the law. The Defence Secretary, John Healey, says European troops are ready to deploy to Ukraine in the coming weeks. He's confirmed any deployment of British troops would cost about £100 million in the event of a peace deal with Russia. Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are due to hold talks in Budapest in the coming weeks. Rachel Reeves is to announce plans she claims will save British firms almost £6 billion a year. The changes are designed to simplify reporting rules, reducing the amount of paperwork smaller firms need to file with Companies House. The Chancellor will set out the proposals at a regional investment summit later. Japan has a female prime minister for the first time in its history. Sanae Takaichi is known as Japan's Iron Lady because of her admiration of Margaret Thatcher. The 64-year-old is the country's fourth leader in just 5 years. Amazon says its cloud computing services are back to normal after a major outage yesterday. The technical problem affected hundreds of popular websites and apps, including social media platforms and banks. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 94.03. It closed up 49 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for many places, the rain heaviest and most frequent in the northwest, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Quaker is an official sponsor of Team GB, and rightly so. After all, the rowing team's motto is Oats Move Boats. But why stop there? Team GB, if you're listening, try these on for size. Quaker sachets move Bob sleighs. Ugly bowl forward roll. One for the gymnasts. The world's your stage when you eat some beige. Maybe just stick to Oats Move Boats. Quaker. Deliciously real, deliciously ugly. Sponsor of Team GB.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, just 3 minutes after seven, Tuesday, October the 21st. As they reckon half the internet went down yesterday. I'll be asking, do we spend too much of our lives? And of course, getting your stories of how it affected you. Meanwhile, in other news, here's Louise, now Baroness Casey, speaking back in June following the publication of her grooming gangs report.
I'm angry on behalf of the victims. I'm angry on behalf of the victims that we don't know about yet and will have been abused or indeed raped at the age of 13 or 14.
Now, the government back in June promptly announced an inquiry. 4 months on, it's yet to start, and two victims have now withdrawn from taking part, and we will speak with one of them later in the show. In other news,
LBC's been given access to an immigration raid alongside police and a Home Office minister. I'm LBC's Henry Riley at a car wash in Crawley.
The revelations continue in the Prince Andrew case. We'll give you effectively a reading of the headlines from that book. And a medical miracle, an electronic eye that enables the blind to see again. Sheila Irvine is one of the participants involved in the clinical trial.
I could have cried when I looked, because I haven't seen letters for so long, and then I lit up the word, and it was overwhelming.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
That internet blackout from A to Z, literally from Amazon to Zoom, with the Bank of Scotland, Halifax, the taxman or woman, Duolingo, Peloton, everyone caught up in between. So if you tried to log on to use some of those services yesterday, it is so frustrating, isn't it? And I, all right, we've made the point. And I'm asking, are we living too much of our life online? Now, the crash caused by issues with cloud computing giant Amazon Web Services, AWS, hit hundreds of the world's biggest websites and apps yesterday, confusing and confounding millions. Users also struggling to reach social media platforms such as Snapchat and Signal, Duolingo that I mentioned, PlayStation, Fortnite, of which I have. Roblox, that looks like a rude word, but I'll go with it. Whatever Roblox is. AWS said the issue originated in data centers in Virginia, USA, and was related to a DNS solution, which is how firms connect to web servers. Speaking with LBC yesterday, global cybersecurity advisor Jake Moore said it's not the first time these servers have faced these issues.
We've been looking at this, say, backbone of the internet as a bit of an issue for quite some years. It's not the first time this has fallen over. And if we look at what it looks like, connected to what's called the domain name system, DNS, that's when you visit a website. So you type in the website as a URL. It doesn't know what it is until it's turned into numbers, has to be turned into an IP address. And that connection seems like it's made a mistake. But that whole deeply embedded network is so old-fashioned. It's legacy, and it does come with problems. And when it goes down, it can knock out so many issues. And like with AWS, so Amazon's web servers, it's knocked off about 30% of the internet.
The government minister on the rounds yesterday evening was Skills Minister and former Home Secretary Jackie Now Baroness-Smith. She told my LBC colleague Andrew Marr it was important to get services running again as soon as possible.
Well, obviously, what's important is that we get services back up and running for people, and national authorities are working with the company in order to make sure that that happens as quickly as possible. That there is also a need, obviously, to ensure continuity of service and safety. And we have quite a lot of expertise in the UK, both in the private sector and, of course, in our agencies to enable that to happen.
Well, Amazon Web Services, AWS, said last night it has resolved the outage that knocked out some of the world's largest websites. Dude, let me know if you've still got problems, by the way. As we turn to Will Guyatt, who's LBC's technology correspondent. OK, the dust has settled. What do we know about yesterday's events? Morning, Will.
Yeah, morning, Nick. The best way to describe this is, you remember when you were in the newsroom and you had the clips library and you go through the door and somebody would be able to tell you what was in there and roughly what filing cabinet it was in?
Yes.
Yesterday morning, in one of those big data centers or sheds, somebody kicked over all the filing cabinets. So all the information was in there, but the internet didn't know how to find it. And that is the problem that happened yesterday morning. And it happened in one of their major data centers. And the reason why this has become such a big issue and why the internet seems to be breaking more often in 2025, some of it is creaking infrastructure, but some of it is because all of these major companies, there's now four or five companies that run and power most of the internet. And when one of those breaks, you get something exactly like this happening. And the reason why five companies do this now is I can go to Amazon and get server space. For the fraction of the cost, it takes me to have a floor of my building having somewhere in East London filled with web servers that break down all the time, and I have to have engineers staffing 24/7. So the bigger issue here is, as society, we see the internet as being free, largely, e.g. we don't pay for it. But the fact is, the cost of running sites is still super expensive, and companies look to save money all the time, and that's why they're all putting their eggs into a handful of baskets with an organization like Amazon.
Right. To keep your analogy going, why can't we get bigger, more secure filing cabinets and bolt them to the wall?
There is a very good question to be said that maybe you can improve the improve how resilient the filing cabinets are, so if somebody like Nick Ferrari can't storm into there and pull them off the wall. That can definitely be something we can do more of. And I think as a result of this, and let's not pull any punches here, this is actually a bigger business for Amazon than its retail business. And everybody I spoke to yesterday was saying to me, oh, you must double check that. I did. And it is a bigger business than Amazon's retail business. They make more money from selling web services now than they do from Bog Roll. So you're in a situation, Nick, where it's going to be embarrassing for them. The reality is, though, the one thing to look at here, right, is... if our government suddenly came out today, let's say, for example, because HMRC was down yesterday, and they said they're going to bring it all of this stuff back into their own servers and their own stuff, but your tax bill is going to go up by 50 quid a year to pay for online services, we'd all go spare, as you'd expect. But this stuff costs money.
Lastly, what do we learn from this? Is there an addiction? Is too much of our life now online and obviously open to these sort of outages?
Do you want to know the best thing I saw yesterday, Nick, was the company apologising for not being able to turn down the temperature of web-enabled beds. Your mattress couldn't cool down as a result of this internet failure. I'm the technology correspondent here at LBC, and I love tech. We are too reliant on it. You don't need an internet-enabled bed to control the temperature of your mattress. We're relying on this stuff too much in many ways.
We'll always enjoy speaking with you. Thank you. Will Guy's LBC's technology correspondent, 11 after 7. Listening TJ Power, who's lead neuroscientist and author of The Doze Effect, works focusing on society's addiction to technology. What do you take? Good to have you on, TJ. What do you take from yesterday? Is it an addiction? And if so, how is it to be combated? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I do think it is a significant addiction. We have built a world where we're pretty addicted to stimulating our brains. And when we have any moments, even now going to the bathroom, we're eating our food without our phones, we're like, oh, I need some kind of stimulation in my brain. It's almost like we've created a relationship as if you were to drink sipping alcohol all day. You'd get pretty hooked on always sipping alcohol. We're doing a similar thing with tech here.
Your book is The Dose Effect. What's that about?
It's all about our four brain chemicals, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins, and teaches people how to rebalance these chemicals in the lives that we live today.
How is that to be done? How does one achieve that?
One needs to consider that these chemicals developed over hundreds of thousands of years for humanity as we evolved as a species. And we evolved with a natural, very effortful, very deeply connected experience of life. And the life we live today, where we wake up and we get easy pleasure straight away in our phones, and we live indoors all day and don't get sunlight and don't move as much and don't connect as much, it's disrupting the balance. So a return to some of the more natural ways. Even if you just go back 50 years, the brain chemistry was operating a lot better than it is today. Some of the slower, lower stimulation moments are important for our brain chemistry.
How were you affected yesterday, TJ?
I saw a few of our websites and things like that not working, and there were some payments that changed. We're running a research study at the moment that took place on Zoom, so it was slightly affected. But I also see moments where the internet goes down as an opportunity to rest a little. And I think we're so obsessed with driving so hard and working so hard that going and reading a book on the sofa is actually pretty cool.
When did you last read a book on a sofa? You don't strike me as a young man who does that that often.
Yeah, it's something I'm trying to convince myself to do more. Like, I grew up with an iPhone since I was like 11 years old. So to me, reading a book on a sofa is rare. But I did sit on a sofa and read a book yesterday. It was a good time.
The work you've done on the book, The Dose Effect, have you tracked how far this addiction might take us? Are there warnings to where ultimately we, society, humankind, whatever you want to call it, where we might end up?
Yeah, we do a huge amount of work with young people as well, and we saw screen times throughout the summer on their phones of 11 to 13 hours a day spent scrolling their phones, about 7 to 8 hours of TikTok.
11 hours a day?
A day, not a week, a day.
Right,
and you think about there's this magical chemical that lives in our brain called dopamine. It creates our motivation, our excitement for life. And when we're scrolling the phones, we drain that chemical very quickly, which causes massive mood and attentional challenges. And if we continue that path and we move to 14, 15 hours a day for young people, for adults, we're at about 6 hours a day of being on our phones. This is going to cause massive mental health challenges and performance challenges in the workplace. And I think it's incredibly important that humanity begin to consider technology is amazing. I love technology. But just like water is something that keeps us alive and can drown us, technology is pretty similar.
Really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for your time. TJ Power, lead neuroscientist and author of The Dose Effect, working on what is effectively addiction. Okay, what did it mean to you? As you probably know, too old to play Fortnite, and I don't bank online. Unfortunately, at the moment, I'm okay with HMRC, so I was relatively, to my knowledge, I was relatively unscathed. What about a Ring doorbell? You wouldn't be able to have those either. I don't have one of those. I think they're really actually weird, to be honest. What was the effect? What did it mean for you? Plus, later in this hour, the revelations just keep on coming. Nothing stopped that. No outage on the internet. More about the allegations concerning Prince Andrew, and they're pretty, pretty seedy stuff. And the world of business.
Debt interest, the cost of public services and the welfare bill all pushed public sector borrowing up to nearly £100 billion in the year to date. I'm Christian May from City AM, and I'll be looking at these numbers with Nick shortly.
Plus job woe from Pizza Hut.
Pizza Hut, get together.
To Pizza Shut, I'll be explaining how many jobs could be lost. 7:15, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
The Israeli club Maccabi Tel Aviv have decided to decline any away tickets they're allocated for their Europa League tie at Aston Villa. The SNP is pushing for a change in the law to formally remove Prince Andrew's dukedom. And Amazon Web Services says it's now back to normal after a major technical outage yesterday. LBC weather. Sunny spells and scattered showers for many places. A high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 in two places. Firstly, clockwise, it's slow from junction 15 at the M4 to 16 at the M40 after an accident. Two lanes stay closed. And then also clockwise, it's slow at junction 28 at the A12. And that was after an accident. And there are delays of about 4 miles on the approach. In Epping Forest, there's been an accident on Wood Ridge and Hill. That's causing delays from the Wake Arms roundabout towards the M25. In Crayford on the High Street, there are southbound queues because a lorry has broken down. On the trains, no Gatwick Express services, they remain suspended. And Great Western Railway can't run between Redhill and Gatwick Airport, but that's because a train's broken down at Gatwick Airport.
This is LBC.
Right, what's for dinner tonight? Co-op's new meal range, Served, takes the hassle out of cooking. Choose from a selection of Italian-inspired mains and sides. And dinner is served for two. All for just £7 for Co-op members. Co-op. Owned by you. Right by you.
£8 for non-members ends 20th of October. Co-op group membership required. Selected products subject to availability. See co-op.co.uk/served.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out. Show support. Report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
Welcome our new bookworms to the club. Now, do you read traditional books or e-books?
Oh, real books.
Traditional, always.
Yes, quite.
I read e-books. I adjust it so the font's huge.
Ooh. They make large font books.
Think bigger. Imagine Moby Dick all cuddled up with a book. His font size.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe it's time for varifocals. At Specsavers, get 2-for-1 varifocal glasses from £110. Conditions and exclusions apply. See online for details.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep. For a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
It is exactly now 19 minutes past seven. Check your clock, your watch, check your mobile phone. It's got it right. It hasn't. By the way, Joe, you'll be the first call. I was just speaking to one of my colleagues who's far more up on these sort of things than I am. But ultimately, this outage yesterday, it's not beyond a stretch to say smart motorways were suddenly, those signs that tell you that there's an obstacle on the road or that you can use, they would suddenly be wiped out. This ridiculous headlong drive towards smart motorways. Ultimately, you remember we were talking about robo-taxis, whatever you want to call them, taxis without drivers. Again, it's not that much of a stretch to say suddenly they'd all go wrong. Or remember the story of the man, I think it was San Francisco Airport, who got to the airport and it just rode round and round and round in circles for half an hour, and the poor bloke got out and had to crawl into the airport because he was so dizzy. Well, he did live, by the way. No one got hurt. I mean, it's awful. Imagine it, just half an hour, he's spun round and round in a circle and he can't get out. And he has to crawl on all fours into San Francisco. Think it's San Francisco. Let's make it San Francisco. No one's going to sue. It was San Francisco Airport. There you go, I've said it. I mean, ultimately, and you love all these, these cars, it's all marvellous. Hello, pilotless plane. Suddenly, whoop, we've lost, can't get control. That's the way we're all going. Joe, you're the first caller. Well, if the palace hoped that the headlines would stop on Prince Andrew, they've got another thing coming. Terrible for the king yesterday. He went to that synagogue in Manchester. Very emotional, meaningful conversations with the rabbi and others there. And I have to say, totally dwarfed by the allegations concerning his younger brother. Daily Mail, Andrew has not paid rent for 22 years. Virtually the same on The Times. Andrew has not paid rent since 2003, whichever way you want to do it. The Guardian, Prince tried to hire trolls to target Joffre. Book claims. We are giving you more, of course, of that book. This is the official publication today, and we'll give you more on that. Lastly, on the newspapers, the Daily Telegraph, grooming inquiry sabotaged by Labour. Sir Keir told to scrap plans and start again. We were speaking of one of the victims who was due to be part of that inquiry, but has stood down. That's coming up later in the show. The LBC app, the story that's on the LBC news bulletins, quite rightly, the Tel Aviv soccer fans who will decline tickets to the Aston Villa game next month. And let's take one at random. Here we are, The Sun Online. Katie Price's ex-husband, Kieran Haler, is charged with rape and sexual assault of a 13-year-old girl while he was married to the star. I must point out that his legal representatives deny all the allegations. OK, Hooked Online, down and out, literally. Your doorbells, your gaming services, pretty much, and your banking apps, pretty much everything. Joe's in Wandsworth. How were you affected, Joe? Good morning.
Yes, I couldn't get online to do banking and stuff like that. Mm. But, you know, we've all been pushed into a corner. They've put everything online because it's so much cheaper for them, and so many banks have shut.
I know.
Plus, if you want to apply for certain things, even like school places these days, you've got to do it online. Because it's easier for them, they've just put everything online, and now we're starting to realise what that actually means when things like what happened yesterday happen, and you know how it all actually works.
Do you think we're going slightly
secure?
Do you think we're going slightly mad with this headlong rush, Joe? Because I genuinely,
yes.
I mean, of course, there are ways that it should benefit us, but I do think we're becoming too dangerously reliant.
Oh, definitely. And at the end of the day, not only can things like what happened yesterday happen, but, you know, the powers that be could decide that they could switch things off for certain people if they so wished to.
How badly were you affected yesterday?
Not terribly. I mean, I don't live my life constantly. I mean, I scroll through my phone way too much, and that's annoying. I just think we're all so addicted to it, you know? And it's awful.
I agree, and it is awful. And you know what? It's not going to stop. Thank you for that, Joe. Look after yourself. Let's get some of your emails and social media on. Andrew Taylor, I must be one of the lucky few. This whole internet outage completely passed me by. I managed to use it as normal all day with no issues. This comes in from Helen in Lancashire. My sister's cat flat was affected by the Amazon outage. This is genius. Helen, are you having sport with me? She was really worried all day because she didn't know if her cats were in or out. Can a cat... I bet a cat... Well, Will Guy, our technology guy, Will Guy at the Guy, was telling us that you can warm your bed or cool your bed. So I bet you can operate your cat flat through Amazon. Well, why not? Ring door. Have you, why do you have ring door? I think ring doorbells are really weird. I know someone rings my doorbell now, I can see what they're going to do, but... Richie in Colchester. How were you affected, Richie? Good morning.
Morning, mate. Well, I'm one of the weirdos that's got a ring doorbell.
Why do you have a ring doorbell? What appeal... You can see if someone rings on your door, I suppose. That's what it says.
Yeah, it's security. Simple as that. It's just a compact, pretty straightforward system to set up.
Okay, all right.
But I've also got ring alarms on my house and on my business, and I couldn't get into my business yesterday.
Oh, God. What do you mean you say you couldn't get it online? You don't mean physically get in, do you?
Well, I couldn't turn the alarm off.
No.
So I get to the door, and I'm trying to turn the alarm off on the app on my phone, and it's not working because that system relies on the Amazon Web Service. It's all part of the same company.
How did you get round? Or you couldn't get round it, presumably. There's no way round. There's no sort of rebooting that you can do, is there?
Well, we did, actually. We managed to get in. The alarm was going off, then unplug the alarm, plug it back in again, and put a manual code in until eventually it's back in again.
Oh, right. So there is an override, or whatever you call it.
Well, yeah, there is on that. But then I've got another thing called Home Assistant, which I won't bore you with the details with. But basically, that controls things in my house, like lights and underfloor heating and solar and things like that. And that relies on a lot of these services, and that all went down as well. So
Richie,
the house alarm was going off and all sorts of things.
What's wrong with a light switch?
You're absolutely right. And by the end of yesterday, I was kind of thinking...
Oh, bless you.
Yeah, maybe a switch.
Do you think we've gone too far? We have gone too far into the world of new tech, haven't we, Richie?
Well, I'm a self-professed geek, so I'm going to disagree there. But
right.
But yeah, I think realistically, for a lot of people that are just using these, you know, for run-of-the-mill things, probably we have.
Look after yourself, Richie. Thanks for being such a good sport. Kelvin says, I'm sure we'll all be fixed before we get our digital ID. Jonathan says, there isn't a problem with your bed being connected to your bed. I don't understand the heating. The problem is the system, Internet of Things, is being designed in the shadow of capitalism. Does the command from your phone to your bed really need to go through an Amazon server, or can it stay on your local network? However, if it did, Amazon would not be making any money. Well, remember again what Will Guyatt told us. They make more money through this than they do selling things such as toilet rolls. This is obviously the future for companies such as AWS and others. All right, we'll return to that in a moment. But to, in all honesty, bigger news, and yet again, more bombshells to rock the royal family. That book is out. Amy Wallace, co-authored Virginia Giuffre's posthumous memoir, Nobody's Girl. She was on the BBC last night.
I know that she would view it as a victory, that he was forced, by whatever means, to voluntarily give them up. And it also just a step in the right direction. You know, Virginia wanted all the men who she'd been trafficked to against her will to be held to account.
Let's turn to Jack Royston, who's chief royal correspondent at Newsweek. What are the major revelations of which we're learning last night and this morning, Jack? Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. So I think one of the, obviously, you know, for a reader, the most emotional stuff is going to be the abuse itself. We did know a lot of Virginia's experiences at that department because she's given interviews, but also she wrote this earlier book that was never published, which was included in court filings. So many of us in the media had already read very, very similar passages to some of the contents of this book. But there is, of course, also a lot of new detail in there. For example, Virginia describes failed suicide attempts in the same year as she settled the lawsuit with Prince Andrew, and she talks about how she took, you know, 250 pills to try to escape the nightmares that she was experiencing, in which she had to relive the abuse, but also some of the stinging, biting, horrible things that people were saying about her on social media and some of the attacks on her character. She talks about a specific one from, you know, an ex-girlfriend of Prince Andrew, and I won't repeat some of the nasty things that were said, but she talks about that, and she talks about actually said, you know, she accuses Sarah Ferguson of launching a kind of PR campaign on behalf of Prince Andrew, defending him on television just before Virginia filed her lawsuit against Andrew in 2021. She feels that they must have known that that was coming because the deadline for filing that case was impending. pending, and Sarah Ferguson went on UK TV to defend her ex-husband. So there is a lot in that kind of the kind of fight back phase of the book, the later chapters and passages of the book that will be new even to journalists who have been following this story very closely. But it is, of course, worth remembering that actually, to a lot of people who want to go out and read and buy that book and read it, they will read some of her core allegations as new, because they won't remember every single detail of them in the way that we do in the media. You know, I've been reporting on this story for years, and so even specific passages of what Virginia put into this previous unpublished book had lodged themselves in my mind, and I recognized them as I was reading. But of course, that won't be the case for most readers.
Where does the story go next, Jack?
The Andrew aspect of it specifically, I mean, he is absolutely not out of the woods. So if the Metropolitan Police are taking a look at, which does not quite mean yet investigating, these claims that he asked his police protection officer to dig up dirt on Virginia. Now, if that builds steam, if the police decide to investigate, if it turns into a prosecution, that could actually see Andrew in court. It could see him charged with a criminal offence. We don't know what he says about it. He might well deny it. But you, Nick, I'm sure, will remember misconduct in a public office as a charge from the Operation Alverton press cases. And there is a real prospect that anybody who was considered to be involved in a conspiracy to commit misconduct in a public office could be hauled in and interviewed, investigated, even charged. So it might not even stop with Andrew. It could involve anybody in the police if they had done what he'd asked, which they may well not have done. Also, Andrew told the Queen's Deputy Press Secretary that he was doing this, you know, that he sent that email to the Queen's Deputy Press Secretary, which means the palace knew that he had done this, that he had made this request to the Police Protection Officer. So the potential for that blast to ripple through the whole of the institution of the monarchy is ever present.
Jack, thanks for your time. Busy man at the moment, Jack Royston, Chief Royal Correspondent at Newsweek. We'll come back to how you were affected by the internet outage. They reckon half the net went down and out. We're continuing to take your stories on that. Also, extraordinary story of an electronic eye enabling the blind to see again. Dr. Mahi Mukit is a surgeon at Moorfields Eye Hospital in London.
This is the first treatment that's been demonstrated to effectively give patients meaningful vision that they can use in their daily life. So I think this is a major advance.
And it is at Moorfields where the groundbreaking trial took place. More on that after the news. And also in the world of business, from Pizza Hut to Pizza Shut. Unfortunately, jobs to go in the process. 7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC News Time. Thomas Watts.
Fans of Maccabi Tel Aviv won't be able to attend their tie against Aston Villa next month, even if a ban is overturned. The Israeli clubs say they will turn down any away tickets because the original decision by officials in Birmingham has created a toxic atmosphere. The SNP is pushing for a change in the law to formally remove Prince Andrew's dukedom. Andrew voluntarily relinquished his Duke of York title last week ahead of today's publication of his accused Virginia Giuffre's posthumous memoir. Figures out this morning show last month's government borrowing was the highest September on record. It rose to £20.2 billion, piling more pressure on the Chancellor ahead of her budget next month. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for many places, the rain heaviest and most frequent in the northwest, a high of 16 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
Prince Andrew is stripped of his royal titles on Friday. This week, Virginia Giuffre's account of her own life is published. Is there an inevitable link between the two? You can find us for free on the Global Player app.
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Mickey could try to sell his car privately. Or get it sold today with We Buy Any Car. He could spend days on end trying to sell to a bunch of time wasters. or sell in a flash and head to the fun fair with the kids. Proper gutted. Or proper impressed. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Half term is here. I've 100% got this. They will keep a lid on the glitter and they will not ambush my work calls. But if all else fails, McDonald's Steel Drop.
Get 15% off the whole menu when you spend £15 on food and drink. Redeem this half term only on the McDonald's app. Fees apply to delivery. 18 plus, one time use per week until the 2nd of November. Participating restaurants, T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protect your small business and understand cybersecurity.
7.34 is the time. Back to internet dependence in a moment, but on to the world of business. Christian Mayer is editor-in-chief at City AM, and we seem to be dependent on borrowing. Figures dropped within the last 30 minutes or so for the government. What are they? What are they telling us? Christian, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Grim news for, well, I was going to say the Chancellor, but I suppose actually it's all of us. These are the latest public sector borrowing statistics. Now, that sounds terribly dry and boring for this early in the morning, but let me just tell you this. They tell us a really important story. We know the government has borrowed a staggering £20.2 billion in September, the highest September borrowing figures since the depths of the pandemic in 2020. Borrowing in the financial year has very nearly hit £100 billion, which is 13% higher than last year and the second highest figure for that period, again, since 2020. We know now that the government is borrowing around £100 billion a year. We know that they're paying about £100 billion a year to service the interest on our existing debt. I mean, who do we think we are as a country? Now, this country has an extraordinary ability to sort of muddle through the mud of these sorts of figures without, you know, collapsing into crisis and catastrophe. But what I'm afraid this all means is that these figures point out that we are chronically unwell as an economy, as a country, and we're in the sort of territory that if you were to look at this with a blank piece of paper in front of you, you would say, right, we need to seriously cut public expenditure to the extent that was previously described as austerity, a word this government will never use, no matter the figures staring at them in the face. And this government will also have to raise taxes. Now, just looking at some of the reaction from analysts and economists that's coming into my inbox this morning, confirming people's expectations now that there will have to be about £27 billion worth of tax rises in the budget to restore order, to stay within the fiscal rules that the Chancellor has set herself. And where is that going to come from? I'll just end on this observation, which is a figure I picked up this morning, that the top 500 taxpayers in this country have already contributed £93 billion in the last tax year. That's 33% of the total tax take. The top 100,000 alone have paid about £55 billion. So although the Chancellor says that she's going to come expect people with the broadest shoulders to carry, you know, responsibility, yeah, yeah, etc., well, I'm sorry, those shoulders are already under quite a lot of strain. So this does set us up for a really difficult budget, I'm afraid to say.
These figures are shocking. £100 billion, 13% up, the second highest since 2020, £100 billion per annum. If we were having this conversation in Paris or New York or Sydney, would we be equally gloomy about our respective economies there, or is this particularly unique to UK, Christian?
There are some problems which are common to all of the economies that you've just mentioned, not least the level of debt. But how countries respond to their debt, how they even raise that debt in the first place, do tend to be very different. The UK has a particular problem, and we've discussed before, you can trace and thank a lot of this back to George Osborne even, the amount of our debt interest repayments, which is linked to the rate of inflation, which, by the way, we will be discussing this time tomorrow, and which is expected to come in double the Bank of England's target of 2%, means that we do have some particular problems. And I'm afraid, as I say, it does all add up to a really very difficult situation indeed for the Chancellor, not least the Chancellor who wants to make economic growth the centrepiece of her time in office. Well, good luck with that.
Good luck with that. Right, let's move to other matters. I'm afraid equally gloomy, particularly if you work for Pizza Hut, because it's Pizza Hut to Pizza Shut. How many are being closed? Christian?
Yeah, this is a shame. I mean, for context, consider the pizza market has changed enormously. It's been changing because of the variety and extent of different businesses and different businesses making those deliveries. And it's also the market in general has become a lot more upmarket. There's a lot more high-end pizza around. So Pizza Hut has been struggling. Now, we know that the brand in the UK was put into administration back in January of this year, and a company called DC London Pie bought the UK restaurants from insolvency out of administration in January this year. Some of those restaurants are now going to be re-taken on by Pizza Hut's global owner, Yum Brands, but about 68 of those restaurants have not survived, and furthermore, 11 delivery sites in the UK will go, talking about 1,200 jobs. And I appreciate that some people just want to go to a Pizza Hut and enjoy the salad bar, and they might not consider the complexity and the complex financial arrangements and ownership structures and insolvency schemes and buyouts that lie behind this brand. It's pretty common to these large consumer-facing restaurants and brands that you're going to have this kind of complex ownership around them. People try to make it work, and when it doesn't, they're going to have to get rid of some of these sites. So I suppose when all is said and done, yeah, about 1,200 jobs on the line, which is a real shame.
Let's talk about your splash, your front page, concerns over a China crisis.
That's right. I mean, gosh, we know that China and the UK's relationship with China is never out of the news these days. One piece at the heart of this is the controversy over the Chinese application to build a super embassy just on the fringe of the City of London, just outside the City of London's authority boundaries, but near to the Tower of London, the old Royal Mint site. The government's under pressure to refuse the now quite advanced planning application for that embassy. There are concerns about, among other things, the site of this embassy and its proximity to very sensitive critical infrastructure cables that run directly beneath it, and particularly financial infrastructure cables. Now, we spoke to a number of senior figures from within the City of London Corporation, which is effectively the council, if you like, of the City of London, albeit about 1,000 years old. It's a very powerful body that represents and runs the financial services district. We spoke to several senior figures within that group yesterday who said that there is alarm, there is concern, that they are deeply worried about some of the issues being raised around security. The City of London does not have a say in where this embassy goes. It's outside of their boundaries. But figures at the City of London representing the financial services industry has said they are very nervous and very worried about some of the issues raised around the security. Now, we put these to the Chinese embassy, who said that these are smears and lies and no rational person could believe that there would be any nefarious activity coming out of that embassy. But the government is under pressure, and they have delayed a decision on whether to grant the full proposal until the 10th of December.
Christian, thanks for that. Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM, 7:41, talk the same time tomorrow. Talk more about the outage that took down around half the internet going down and out. More on that in a moment. But to medical matters, and as I said right at the top of the show, an extraordinary story. Blind people who had a microchip inserted in the back of their eyeball have been able to read again in a medical breakthrough that heralds a new era of treatment. Patients were living in darkness before taking part in the trial. Sheila Irvine was one of those participants.
I could have cried when I looked, because I haven't seen letters for so long, and then I lit up the word, and it was overwhelming, because I read the post, read books, do crosswords, Sudoku.
Sheila is a 70-year-old self-confessed bookworm who is now able to read again. She is one of 38 patients from Europe, including five who had the procedure at Moorfields Eye Hospital here in London. Well, let's get an expert into the field. Glenn Jeffrey is Professor of Neuroscience at the UCL Institute of Ophthalmology and joins me now. Can you start off, Professor, by putting it in layman's terms? What has actually been done here? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mick. Macular degeneration, a massive problem, a growing disease where, as you age, the centre of your retina degenerates, so you suffer from central retinal blindness.
Do they sort of wear out then, effectively, Glenn?
To be honest, that's a pretty good phrase. Right. I mean, you generally don't find 10-year-olds with macular degeneration. Right. It's something that has got multifactorial driving it. And if I get you to live to 120, probably 50% of you will have macular degeneration.
Right.
It's the disease of aging. So we've got no way of dealing with it. The central retina degenerates. And there's been lots of kind of high-tech devices that have been put forward in the past to implants to try and generate the visual world by an artificial device that's been put into the central retina. This one's a bit different. It's a bit different because it uses a camera. So a camera captures the world and sends a message to an implant that's under the retina. And that is what allows people to have, let's use our language carefully here, an improvement in a pretty dire situation.
Well, I was going to ask them, presumably these people aren't going to be able to conduct major surgery, are they?
No, they're not getting their driving license back.
No.
But Ian, if you have lost all your central vision, anything that someone can do for you is a massive plus.
Of course.
So even if you can read a letter, if you can read a word, then that is a very, very big plus. So from a personal point of view, it's terribly important. From a point of view of what this costs society, this is not a procedure your GP is going to do.
Right.
It's a procedure that is pretty high tech. It involves a very specialized surgeon. It involves you doing a lot of training to find those letters and understand what you're looking at. So it's really great. It gives people hope. But at the same time, let's keep that hope relatively realistic. Okay, this is not going to suddenly hit the market and everybody is suddenly going to see. The other thing to bear in mind is the central retina has started to degenerate. So your photoreceptors are gone. And so we slip this device under the retina. That doesn't mean that the rest of your retina is going to stay there.
Oh.
Over a slow, long process, the central retina will go completely. But, you know, if you're like me, 70, I might not be concerned about that if I have an extra 5 years where I can read a letter. So let's be realistic. But it certainly is a different way forward.
Lastly, I know you've then mentioned that it's due to macular degeneration. If someone was blind from birth, is it going to be able to help them, or is it purely those whose sight has degenerated?
It would be very unlikely it would help people that were blind from birth.
I see.
Your visual system needs to experience the world as you grow up to function properly. We very often say that if you had someone that was blind from birth and you restored vision to them, they wouldn't be very happy.
Professor, grateful for your time. Thank you. Glenn Jeffrey is Professor of Neuroscience at the UCL Institute of Ophthalmology. Coming up after the news, the government are talking about a blitz on red tape. How many times have we heard that? But in the next hour, a victory for common sense?
I'm not even sure if it is the law. I think we're suing the police for wrongful arrest and false imprisonment.
You might recognise the voice. That's creator of Father Ted Graham Linehan. That case has been dropped, as the police say they will stop investigating non-crime hate. More on that later. 7:45 LBC News headlines now then. Thomas Watts.
Fans of Maccabi Tel Aviv won't be able to buy tickets for their away tie at Aston Villa next month, even if a ban is overturned. Ministers are facing renewed pressure to formally remove Prince Andrew's dukedom. And Amazon says its cloud computing services are back to normal after a major outage yesterday. LBC weather. Sunny spells and scattered showers for many, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M25 on the western stretch, clockwise from junction 15 at the M4 to 16 at the M40. It's following an accident where two lanes are closed. And then anti-clockwise, it's slow from junction 21 at the M1 to 17 at Maple Cross. And that was after an accident that happened earlier. Clockwise as well on the M25, very busy to junction 28 at the A12. And that was after an accident that happened earlier. On the train, still no Gatwick Express services running. Southeastern are now running between Rochester and Swanley, but with delays of about 20 minutes. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo and Northern lines.
This is LBC.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £34 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop.
Whoop whoop!
Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out. Show support. Report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe, only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £34 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Whoop whoop! Thank you, far away person. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Trains are three bridges for two adults, one skeleton and one fairy werewolf, as you do.
Just one pumpkin, kids! Charlie, not that one, mate. It's nearly as big as you.
Back on the train with two little monsters and a couple of pumpkins. Now off home to spend a good 3 hours carving. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
7:49, coming back to your stories about how you had to battle through that outage in a moment. Let's go to other matters, and the government is determined to battle through red tape. And joining us with more details is Labour MP and Business and Trade Secretary Peter Carl. I understand, I think you're joining us from the Regional Investment Summit in Birmingham, Secretary of State. Briefly, what is that hoping to achieve today? Good morning to you.
Good morning. It's great to be with you again. Yes, I'm standing here in Edgbaston Stadium. We are about to have 350 businesses descend on this room. These businesses coming together because they're aligning with government and they are investing or announcing the investment of £10 billion into our economy. Really important that we do this outside of London. We show that we are investing in our regions. These are going to be creating jobs, wealth, opportunities right around our country. And at the same time, we're going to be announcing as a government the reduction in bureaucracy and red tape and, of course, the regulatory reforms that we're going to be firing the starting gun on here today. I heard you do the intro a couple of minutes ago, Nick, where you sounded a little bit cynical and weary about these announcements and governments in the past.
Nobody told me he was listening. Why didn't somebody tell me Kyle was listening? Do go on, Secretary of State.
Nick, I can promise you that we're not just announcing these things today in esoteric terms. I'm going to be announcing cast iron, copper-bottomed ways that we are removing the kinds of barriers
Tell me what they are. What has gone? I appreciate your new in post. I get that. But I did hear this 15 months ago. By the way, I've heard it from the Conservatives as well. But let's talk about you. So what has been cut? What red tape has already been cut? Secretary of State.
Well, I've been in post for a couple of weeks in this job.
Yeah, but the government promised this 15 months ago. So what has been cut?
So today I am announcing £230 million worth of deregulation. So from today, some of the directors' reporting that needs to be done to Companies House will stop. That means 200 hours worth of form filling from coffee shops, for example. Coffee shops have to do directors' reports that nobody will ever read. Well, not from today. That's going to save businesses, large and small, 200 hours worth of form filling. And this is just one of the ways that we're going to be cutting today. I'm going to be announcing just within the reporting needs, £200 million worth of red tape gone from today. And that'll be every year between now and the Parliament. And today we're also announcing, as part of that package, £1 billion worth of cuts to bureaucracy. The Chancellor will be making these announcements a bit later on. I'll be announcing more of them going forward. But look, in terms of getting innovation out there into the economy, if you're using drone technology, for example, it's taking up to 2 years to get regulatory compliance. We're going to get that down to a couple of months. That meets the sort of American standards that we need to match, and we need to be the best place to invest. So these are the kinds of sort of bits of red tape and bureaucracy and form filling that is holding people back. We're taking it really seriously, and we are doing practical, implementable measures that people can start using today.
But just lastly, to go back on this, lastly for this bit, to go back on my cynicism, nothing's actually been, and you only knew in post, nothing's been done in the preceding 15 months then? Because I did ask you what's been cut already, and you weren't able to...
Oh, no, sorry, Nick. So in the previous 15 months, let me give some examples. We set up the Regulatory Innovation Office in government. That means we've taken areas across the regulatory framework. So, for example, getting cultivated food into the economy did take over 2 years. We got that down to a couple of months. We cut away the red tape to do so because it was holding people back. When it comes to AI technology, we have obliterated much of the regulation that was holding back getting innovation into our economy. When we left the EU, it was taking an average of 2 years to get regulatory compliance for technologies like AI. That has now been got down to, you know, just a couple of months now on average. So we have done a huge program of deregulation and re-regulation and making sure that regulation is smart for the moment we're living in.
Right.
When I was in my previous role as a Department for Science, Innovation and Technology, we had a profound program of rethinking the way that we regulate for these areas. And this is something we're carrying on now, and we're stepping up even more. The previous government didn't even know how much the regulation was costing our economy. We're the first government to actually do an assessment of how much regulation costs our economy, and we've come up with the figure of £22 billion, and that now means that we can now start measuring it, and we can measure the progress, right. So you can actually hold us to account when we say 25% will be reduced over the course of this parliament,
okay.
Because now we're actually giving the metrics for you to hold us to account for.
Okay. If we're talking about holding to account, if I can just move it, I understand 350 businessmen and women and mayors coming to your summit talking about billions of pounds worth of investment, but that's going to be needed, isn't it, Secretary of State? Because you might be aware of figures that were released just at the top of this hour, where we're now on course to borrow £100 billion. It's up 13%, and this is the second highest figure since the days of COVID 2020. We are bankrupt, bust and broke under Labour, aren't we, Secretary of State?
No, absolutely categorically.
Well, why are we having to borrow
not?
£20.2 billion last month and an annual total of £100 billion, the second worst since 2020? Do explain.
No, because when you look at the debt to GDP ratio, we are stable as this country, and we are doing what it takes to invest our way out of the challenge that we inherited from the Tory government. Now, bear in mind that when we came into office, we inherited a growth emergency. We had no growth, high taxation, low growth, or no growth, and we have to break out of that cycle. What Rachel Rees has done is restored stability to our economy. We have had the fiscal
maxed out
rules
the credit
and everything.
Cards. Mr. Kyle.
And everything, and
she
everything,
has maxed
everything,
out the credit
everything
cards.
That is
£20.2 billion 1 month alone, on target for £100 billion per annum, beyond any other European competitor. She's just maxed out her
everything.
Credit cards.
Everything we have done has been within the fiscal rules so that the market can see that we are operating within very tight fiscal rules. And then in doing so, yes, we are investing into our economy, into the skills of our nation, into the innovation of our nation. We are finding ways to make sure that we can get our public services back on their feet, because all of this lays the foundation for economic growth. Now, the growth will come from the private sector, and that's why this radical program that starts today that we announce of deregulation, of the red tape that's holding back businesses, will show that we can unleash the growth that will come from the private sector, built on top of firm public sector.
The last time I looked at growth, Mr. Kyle, it was at 0.2%. That's not going to get the credit cards paid off, is it?
Overall growth is the second highest in the G7. We were the highest for parts of the last year. And, well, you can see that we are performing well against our competitors. And you can see how just tough... We are performing well against our competitive countries, and you can see because of the performance of our competitive and comparable countries that we are operating in an extremely tough global set of circumstances. We've delivered 3 trade deals. We were the first to deliver a deal with the United States. In the last, in the national investment summit last year, £68 million, £1 billion committed to our economy. Mm-hmm. In President Trump's visit, £150 billion of investment into our country, another £10 billion today, and on top of that, we're announcing a radical reform to our regulatory system. All of these things show creativity, boldness, and urgency in the way that we are managing our economy to get growth into it, right, so we can have the long-term growth and reforms that will unleash the potential we have as a country.
Mr. Carr, last minute or so together, you talk about delivery. What's happened to the inquiry, the so-called grooming gang inquiry that was promised in June and has yet to begin? Two victims now stepping down from the panel on the inquiry. Where's the delivery there, Mr. Kyle?
Well, we will be delivering that inquiry, and we need to make sure we get it right. There has been years and years of failure for those victims of grooming gangs. We will not let that stand, and it is incredibly important, and I think everybody who is listening to this will understand the sensitivities around this and the importance of getting it right for those victims. Shabana Mahmood is determined to do so.
But what's holding her up? I don't understand, Mr. Kyle.
Well, I can't comment on an inquiry which is being assembled at this moment in time. Please, when we announce the constituent parts of that inquiry and the full inquiry when it is announced, I will very happily come back and talk to you about it at that point, when people can see the facts and the people and the determination we have to get that inquiry right.
Lastly, as it's now reported that Prince Andrew was deemed a potential national security risk because of his links to alleged Chinese spies, isn't it time for a full parliamentary debate about this man?
Well, those are matters for Parliament. I know that some people have put down some requests for debates. Those are things that the Speaker of the House of Commons will make a decision on.
And you would support such a debate?
The Speaker. Well, we will support any actions that the Speaker of the House of Commons, independently of government, takes.
I mean, as the government is doing all it can to get growth going, how do you feel that he's not paid rent on his 30-room mansion for 20 years, Mr. Kyle? It's just so out of step with the people you're trying to help up at there at Edgbaston, isn't it?
Well, on that particular matter, that's a lease with the Crown Estate, and those are matters for the King. They're not matters for government or myself. But let me be really clear, you know, because what we are talking about a situation, and we're talking on the day when the memoirs of Virginia Giuffre are released. Once again, the spotlight is on the victims of Jeffrey Epstein. Let's stay focused on that. And I don't want to I don't want to give the impression that I am not, you know, 100% focused on their needs on a day like this, because the crimes that were committed by Jeffrey Epstein are horrific, horrendous. The legacy of those crimes is still ongoing today. Right. And I urge anyone who has any information or can contribute towards justice and information for those victims to make sure they're engaging as freely and openly as possible.
Peter Carr, great for your time. Good luck at the Regional Investment Summit in Edgbaston in Birmingham. More than 350 businessmen, women and mayors. I hope it goes well and gets in lots of cash. We've got to 8 o'clock. Time for LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, ministers are facing growing pressure to formally remove Prince Andrew's dukedom as his accuser's book goes on sale. Andrew voluntarily gave up his titles last week, but he'll technically continue to hold them unless they're removed through a change in the law. He remains under scrutiny over claims in Virginia Giuffre's posthumous memoir. Jack Royston, chief royal correspondent at Newsweek, says Andrew is not out of the woods yet.
If the Metropolitan Police are taking a look at, which does not quite mean yet investigating, these claims that he asked his police protection officer to dig up dirt on Virginia, we don't know what he says about it. He might well deny it. But there is a real prospect that anybody considered to be involved in a conspiracy to commit misconduct in a public office could be hauled in.
Prince Andrew has always rejected allegations of sexual misconduct. Supporters of Maccabi Tel Aviv won't be able to buy tickets for their tie at Aston Villa next month. The Israeli club have decided to decline any allocation, despite ministers' efforts to overturn a ban on their fans attending the Europa League match. They say the original decision by local officials in Birmingham has created a toxic atmosphere. Amazon Web Services says it's now returned to normal operations after yesterday's major outage. The issue at the retail giant's cloud computing arm affected hundreds of the world's most popular websites and apps. An American man who faked his death and fled to Scotland has been jailed for at least 5 years for rape. Nicholas Rossi was found guilty of two charges by a court in Utah earlier this year. The 38-year-old, who was arrested in Glasgow in 2021, is believed to have used at least a dozen aliases to avoid capture. Public sector borrowing increased to more than £20 billion last month, the highest September figure for 5 years. The cost of debt, interest, public services and benefits all increased compared with the previous 12 months. It piles further pressure
on the Chancellor ahead of her budget next month. In the city, the FTSE 100's reopening at 94.03. It closed up 49 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for many places. The rain heaviest and most frequent in the northwest, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after eight, Tuesday, October the 21st. A victory for common sense. Lord knows we need it. Britain's largest police force has announced it will no longer investigate so-called non-crime hate incidents in the light of the Graham Linehan story. We'll give you more details and, of course, seek your reactions to that. In other news,
LBC's been given access to an immigration raid alongside police and a Home Office minister. I'm LBC's Henry Riley at a car wash in Crawley.
Staying with policing matters, the grooming inquiry promised back in June now will not start. Two members of the panel have stood down. You'll hear from one of those, a victim. And within the last 15 minutes or so, I asked the senior government minister on the round today, Business Secretary Peter Carl, why the delay?
Well, we will be delivering that inquiry, and we need to make sure we get it right. There has been years and years of failure for those victims of grooming gangs. We will not let that stand.
Later this morning, former Prime Minister Boris Johnson is then at that COVID inquiry. We'll look ahead to that. And a desperately sad story. Martin Kosser's 17-year-old son, Charlie, was fatally stabbed 2 years ago by a stranger at a party in West Sussex. He's now launched a charity, Charlie's Promise, to educate on the dangers of carrying knives.
Yes. I throw myself into Charlie's promise. I made him a promise that I would spend the rest of my life educating young groups of people about the dangers and immeasurable impacts of knife crime. We have lots of charity objects, but initially it starts with education.
And I'll speak with that heartbroken father later in the hour as the documentary goes on TV tonight.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
At last, a headline I would suggest we can all cheer. Met scraps non-crime hate investigations. Britain's largest police force, the Met in London, has announced it will no longer investigate non-crime hate incidents. The Metropolitan Police saying it hoped the move would provide a clearer direction for officers, their words not mine, allowing them to focus on criminal investigations. The force said incidents would still be recorded for intelligence purposes, but officers would not get involved in, again using the Met's words, policing toxic culture war debates. Well, when you consider as around 200 phones get nicked every day in London, goodness knows how many assaults. People have even been allegedly fatally stabbed because they're wearing expensive watches. Perhaps it'd be an idea to get back to regular policing. Now, the announcement came after Graham Linehan, the comedy writer who was arrested at Heathrow by five armed officers over he posted messages he'd posted on social media, was told he would face no further action. Let's go back to that. In September, the arrest of Mr. Linehan, the comedy writer, revealing that he'd flown into Heathrow from Arizona. He spoke to the BBC last month about the moment he was arrested.
They called my name out, and I think I immediately knew what was going to happen. I had to scramble and get all my stuff. I'm very clumsy at the best of times, so it was quite a display. And then I stepped off the plane, and there were five police framing the doorway. For 8 years now, I've been standing up for women's rights and trying to get people's attention about what's happening to kids in gender clinics. And for all of those 8 years, I've been harassed. And I just couldn't believe that the police are still doing the bidding of these dangerous activists. I'm not even sure if it is the law. I think we're suing the police for wrongful arrest and false imprisonment.
Mr. Linehan's arrest sparked a furious debate about the issue of free speech in this country and non-crime hate incidents recorded and investigated by the police. Last month, following the incident, I spoke with His Majesty's Chief Inspector of Constabulary, Sir Andy Cook, who told me that forces should no longer spend their time policing these supposed offences.
Quite simply, we've seen recently some issues that have not placed the police in the best light. I don't blame individual police officers for that. We have a situation where the whole issue of recording non-crime hate incidents and the legislation that sits around policing social media and online issues needs a fundamental review. It is far too complex for the police. The public don't understand it. And we're in a situation now where individual issues like we've seen recently really do disguise some of the great work that policing does around the bravery of officers, the compassion of officers and the professionalism of officers.
Well, that's His Majesty's Chief Inspector of Constabulary. Let's bring into the conversation Connie Shaw, who's External Affairs Officer at the Free Speech Union. Just to clarify one thing, you assisted Mr. Linehan. In what way was that assistance, and does the case against the Met now cease? Good morning to you.
Morning, Nick. So now we are suing the Met Police for wrongful arrest and imprisonment of Graham. We've always supported Graham's right to freedom of expression and speech. And we have launched crowdfunders that we have had thousands of pounds of donations to, and we're still asking for support. That's what the Free Speech Union does. And obviously, we're funded by our members, who we also support whenever they need help, and now we're using that really kind support of our members to sue the Met Police, because as much as it's obviously it's a bittersweet win, I suppose, that Graham, this baseless investigation into Graham has been dropped. The process is the punishment, and what happened to Graham was so horrific and so traumatizing, to the extent that Graham was released from custody only when a nurse discovered that his blood pressure was so high that he needed to go to A&E. As he said in that clip, Graham has been at the behest of trans activists for 8 years, and he's had to leave the UK because of it. And when he returned to the UK to go to a trial at the behest of a different trans activist, a separate trial, he was arrested on the spot. He was returning to the UK a legal matter elsewhere. The police didn't even think they could just ask him for an interview. They chose to arrest him, originally claimed on the suspicion of inciting violence, which isn't actually a term used in our statute books, and then said that it was about he was arrested on suspicion of stirring up hatred on the basis of sexual orientation, despite that nowhere did he mention someone's sexual orientation. So it seems like the police were very confused. And then they placed the draconian bail conditions, which meant he wasn't allowed on X, which we challenged and then they dropped. And then they changed that to saying that he couldn't contact any of the victims. Now, who those victims were was very unclear, and it was proven that there were no victims when the judge overturned that bail condition, claiming that it was so broad that supposedly Graham couldn't tweet anything in case the trans activists, anyone who was offended by what he was saying. So we've managed to get all of Graham's bail conditions overturned at the Free Speech Union. And it seems that the police have been very confused here. They didn't even turn up to the hearing to get them overturned to defend themselves.
Are you, notwithstanding what Mr. Linehan endured, are you supportive of the fact that the Met will no longer investigate so-called non-crime hate incidents, Connie?
Absolutely. We've been at the forefront of this campaign, the Free Speech Union has, to get rid of non-crime hate incidents. Toby Young, Lord Young, our founder and general secretary, just tabled an amendment in the Lords to scrap non-crime hate incidents. And it's there's an absolute connection between Graham's story and the work of the Free Speech Union that this has now been announced. But this is not the end of the war, because now we need to make sure that every other police force stops investigating these. A report found that 60,000 hours a year are being spent by police on these non-crime hate incidents. And not only that, they may not now be investigating them, but we also need to get them to stop recording them in a way that they come up in on enhanced DBS checks, because you could sacrifice a job opportunity. The other thing, you may not even know if you have a non-crime hate incident against your name. I'll just remind your listeners what a non-crime hate incident actually is. And I'm quoting here, where there is no criminal offence, but the person reporting perceives that that the incident was motivated wholly or partially by hostility, the incident will be recorded as a non-crime hate incident. Police officers may also identify a non-crime hate incident even where no victim or witness has done so. We've had extraordinary examples of this sort of thing, including children being investigated. And there was one case of two schoolgirls being investigated for saying that another pupil smelt like fish. I mean, this is ridiculous that our police are wasting time on this when 75% of burglaries go unsolved. One in five shoplifting instances don't get attended to.
Connie, lastly, you mentioned crowdfunding. Is there, for listeners who might want to get involved, is there a website to which you can direct them, or what's the, how do we move forward on that?
Yes, if you just search Free Speech Union, Graham Linehan, you can donate to his crowdfunder. We are so grateful for everyone's support. We have never been more busy at the Free Speech Union. We have been, we set up in early 2020, and we have never been so busy with requests. We don't only just help individual people with their issues. Maybe at work, you've been disciplined for saying the wrong thing, for thinking the wrong thing, or you may be having trouble at university. I was almost expelled from the University of Leeds for my gender critical views after I interviewed Graham, and the Free Speech Union helped me, and I may not have graduated without them. Okay. We also have huge campaigns on wider issues such as legislation, and now we have Lord Toby Young.
You're a tremendous advocate for what the FSU, the Free Speech Union, is doing, but I have to leave it there. I'm sorry, Connie, only for time reasons. Thank you. Your external affairs officer at the Free Speech Union, and you helped Mr. Linehan in that case. Quick word from Kevin Hurley, who's a former Detective Chief Superintendent for the Met and served as Police and Crime Commissioner for Surrey, joining me now. Good to have you on, Mr. Hurley. Is this a return to common sense policing? Good morning.
Yes, thank God. It's the start of a return to common sense policing. There's a lot of other things that need to be done before we get back to what we might call the fundamental role of the police, which is to keep the public safe. But yeah, thank goodness. This was a huge waste of time, and it was much more than 60,000 hours a year. It was a needless knee-jerk reaction by senior police officers starting to go down this route when they buckled over to various activist groups shouting loudest without thinking what were the implications of bringing in these directions to start to operate in this way.
So, Mr. Hurley, you've been in and around policing all your working life. How has it gone backwards in this fashion?
Well, because one of the key things you need is for the public to at least acquiesce to the existence of the police. And this kind of activity makes the police look really foolish and irrational. And we end up then with large numbers of video clips out there of police officers acting like automatons when they themselves know what they're doing is following a ridiculous instruction. The role of the police is to keep us safe by catching people who steal our phones, break into our houses, assault women and girls. And this is a real distraction from police time.
Grateful for your time. I have to leave it there. Sorry, Kevin. It's a busy morning. Thank you. Kevin Hurley, former Detective Chief Superintendent with the Metropolitan Police, and you served as Police and Crime Commissioner for Surrey. Calls coming in already on that. This, I have to say, would seem to be actually a forward step at last in the world of policing. But sadly, in other policing or other legal matters, this grooming inquiry is still not off the ground. Here's Baroness Louise Casey speaking back in June following the publication of her grooming gangs report.
I'm angry on behalf of the victims. I'm angry on behalf of the victims that we don't know about yet and will have been abused or indeed raped at the age of 13 or 14.
4 months on, still yet to begin, and two victims have withdrawn from taking part, and will speak with one of them after the news. 8:16, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Ministers are facing fresh calls to change the law to formally remove Prince Andrew's dukedom. Fans of Maccabi Tel Aviv won't be able to attend their tie against Aston Villa next month, even if a ban is overturned. And figures out this morning show last month's government borrowing was the highest September figure in 5 years. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for many places, the rain heaviest in the northwest, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Two lanes stay closed on the M25 clockwise just after junction 16 at the M40. It's following an accident and there are delays from junction 14 at Heathrow. Also on the M25, traffic is being held clockwise just before the QE2 bridge and that's following an accident and there are delays from junction 30 at the A13. On the train, still no Gatwick Express and also Great Western Railway can't run between Redhill and Gatwick Airport. It's after a train broke down earlier. Southeast Preston are running now between Rochester and Swanley, but with delays of around 20 minutes. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo and Northern lines following a signal failure.
This is LBC.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
Music, news, celebrities, socials, entertainment, podcasts, video.
The world of media and entertainment is a world we all turn to every second that we can. And university isn't for everyone. So, if you're leaving school, take a look at joining Global Academy in year 14 to take a unique course in creative enterprise and kickstart your media career. Get industry experience, develop your entrepreneurial skills, and it's free. Apply now at globalacademy.com.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
Half term is here. I've 100% got this. They will keep a lid on the glitter and they will not ambush my work calls. But if all else fails, McDonald's Steel Drop.
Get 15% off the whole menu when you spend £15 on food and drink. Redeem this half term only on the McDonald's app. Fees apply to delivery. 18 plus, one time use per week until the 2nd of November. Participating restaurants, T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
What have we got? Just coming up to 20 minutes past eight. We'll come back then to our conversation. Non-crime hate incidents. This follows the Graham Linehan investigation. The 57-year-old, as we heard from the representative from the Free Speech Union, detained last month, questioned on suspicion of a public order offence. Someone merely has to say that they're offended by something they think someone else has said, and the police get involved. We have to hope that there are recommendations. But let's get into something where, sadly, the police have been involved, but we haven't got the inquiry going, something I mentioned earlier in the show. And the government stands accused of sabotaging the National Grooming Gangs inquiry by victims and campaigners. The long-promised inquiry, suffering a serious blow yesterday after two victims quit what's called a liaison panel, claiming they were being silenced. Well, you'll hear from one in just a moment. But in the first hour of the show, about 35 minutes or so ago, I was speaking with one of the senior government ministers on the round today. He's the business secretary, Peter Carle. And I asked him, why such a lengthy delay?
Well, we will be delivering that inquiry, and we need to make sure we get it right. There has been years and years of failure for those victims of grooming gangs. We will not let that stand, and it is incredibly important. And I think everybody who is listening to this will understand the sensitivities around this and the importance of getting it right for those victims. Shabana Mahmood is determined to do so.
But what's please, holding her up? I don't understand, Mr. Kyle.
Well, I can't comment on an inquiry which is being assembled at this moment in time. Please, when we announce the constituent parts of that inquiry and the full inquiry when it is announced, I will very happily come back and talk to you about it at that point when people can see the facts and the people and the determination we have to get that inquiry right.
Delay, delay, delay. Let's turn to Ellie Reynolds, who is one of the people who stood down from the inquiry. I hope I can call you Ellie. Good morning. Do I describe you as a victim or a survivor? Which do you see yourself as? Good morning to you.
Morning. Definitely a survivor after the ordeals that we had to go through.
Okay. How did you get involved, and how did the government get in contact with you to ask you to take part, Ellie?
Get involved in just
in
the panel?
Actually, yes, the background to how you became a survivor, if you don't mind, as long as it doesn't distress you to go into detail on that.
Yeah, I think it's good to raise the awareness, because there's always a massive stigma on that girls are groomed by getting free alcohol and free drugs, and sometimes that is the case, but not in all cases. Mm. I was 13, I was in a child relationship with a young male, and his family member was in a relationship with what turned out to be my main abuser. I was kidnapped kidnapped and taken off the street, and my abuse started from that. I was held hostage for up to a week at a time. I was forced with drugs. I was gang raped multiple times. They're very, very nasty men. If you say anything, you're threatened. I always think that there's such a stigma that needs to be addressed, you know, first and foremost, because everybody just sees that, you know, these girls are from broken homes. I had a very good upbringing. I was very privileged. So I always like addressing the fact that the stigmas aren't always true. Like I say, in some cases, girls do, you know, they are plied with free alcohol and free drugs, but it's not in all cases, and all girls shouldn't be tarnished like that, and boys.
Where did you find the strength to survive this?
I think after being involved for 5 years with my abusers, and then coming to a harsh reality and recognition that my abusers had children, and at that point I'd been involved for that long and I was getting older, and I thought, you know, I have absolutely no doubt that they would do that to their own. So I knocked on the door of one of my abuser's girlfriends, and because I knew that she had a child to him, and I said, look, you need to know what he's like and you need to get out. I think the courage and the strength came from protecting the future.
What did the girlfriend do? How did she react to you?
She rang the police straight away. She rang the police. She did say that she, you know, she doesn't doubt anything about what he's like. I think that there's been previous situations in the past, but she rang the police and initially supported me.
Now let's talk a little about this inquiry. Did the government find you? Did you find it? How were you? How did it get involved?
So I was in contact with Fiona, and I think Fiona was trying to get me on the panel for some powerful voices.
This is Fiona Goddard, just to clarify.
Yeah.
Who's another survivor, yeah.
Yeah, she's great. So I was actually contacted by Fiona to join the panel with her. So that's how I became involved with it.
What were you hoping it might achieve?
I was hoping that the panel and the inquiry was going to end up achieving justice and safety for our future, safety for our children's future. You know, we have to look at all of the potentials for the future that we need to change now. I genuinely thought that inquiry was going to be, you know, our opportunity to seek that justice, to not be silenced, to be heard, and more importantly, you know, seen as important and seen as priority, because we were led to believe that it was a survivor-led panel. So I think what I wanted from that was just humanity, really, in a nutshell.
Why have you decided to step away from it, Ellie?
I decided to step away for a variety of reasons. One was, like, the control that they all managed to grasp over us. So we had, like, conditions in place that we weren't allowed to seek support from outside of them. So if I was, like, say, for example, if I was a little bit overwhelmed or struggling, I wasn't allowed to seek support from my family or any other survivors on the panel. We were discouraged from speaking to outside of the panel. So to me, that felt like a division. It felt like it was then set out to try and divide us and make us weak again. You know, a lot of survivors, they don't go to authorities for support. They go to family and they go to other survivors because the authorities have failed them so many times before.
Ellie, who put out those stipulations, those rules then? Where did they come from?
That came from inside the panel. That came from the organisation that was running it alongside the Home Office.
Did they explain why they were doing that?
Not really. It was more like, you know, it was more top secret stuff. Like, we weren't allowed to discuss anything. I think at looking back on it now, it was more a manipulation tactic to say, you know, they came across as really nice, but equally controlling. So they were saying, like, oh, you know, you know, we understand that you're so sensitive. So if you need to talk to anybody, you don't talk to survivors, you come to us. And when you read back on the emails now, you can see that it's nothing short of gaslighting. How they've ran the whole inquiry anyway, we were led to believe that we would be shaping the terms of reference. And apparently now there's something flying around that apparently the terms of reference have already been drafted. So there was actually no point of us even being there. I think from my personal point of view, it's almost like they had the strong survivors on a panel that had, you know, been strong enough to agree to do this and to relive their past. And it's basically to find out what we knew and how they were going to cover it up in the long run.
Why do you suppose they're doing this, Ellie? Have you and Fiona talked about that?
I think everybody's got, like, different views on it, but from my I can only speak for myself, and yeah. I think from my view is that people cover up these grooming scandals because they're scared of their own jobs being in jeopardy, they're scared of being labelled as racist, and it shouldn't be like that. Like, we've almost had, like, a tactic put over where we're fearful of saying what ethnicity our abusers are, and it shouldn't be like that. And I think if the inquiry actually was successful and it came out, a lot of police officers, social workers, etc. would lose their jobs. So I think it's been a cover-up from the start, and I think it's just initiating that false hope on the general public so they stay quiet about it.
What was the ethnicity of your abusers?
My abusers were Bangladeshi. So Muslim, it was a Muslim grooming gang.
And who do you think failed you?
I'd say that all of the survivors have been failed twice. They've been failed twice by the abuse that they suffered, and they've been failed then by the systems and authorities. Because when you pluck up the courage to go to authorities and systems, you're seen as a liar, you're seen as not credited enough, you're seen as anything that they can undermine you and demoralise you by staying quiet. You feel silenced. You're nothing short of silenced in any of this raising awareness, especially when it comes down to grooming gangs.
How disappointed are you? This, now, obviously, it's not, probably might not even get going again this year. How disappointed are you by how long it's taking, lastly, Ellie?
Do you know, I think it's, I'm disappointed. I am heartbroken, but equally as well, I'm not surprised. To me, it's, I've kind of seen this come in. It's another way to silence everybody so that the government and the authorities look like they're doing the job, but they're not. It's basically a whitewash.
Ellie, I've enjoyed our extended time together. Good life. Is your life better now? You seem very much in control of your life now, and quite robust in your views.
I'm great now. I've started a career on a political journey, which is a bit different for me.
You're going into politics, are you?
Yeah, so I've been doing a lot of conferences with Reform. So I've my life's a whole lot better now, and I'm a whole lot stronger. And I think if my voice can be just one other person's survival guide, I've done my job.
I'll be interviewing you as an MP one day, I'm sure, not before too long.
I hope so.
Ellie, thanks for your input on all that. Ellie Reynolds is a survivor who's decided to step away from that so-called inquiry. As, of course, she's been a victim. I know when she said it was a Muslim grooming gang. Just to make it plain, we obviously understand at LBC that it's more of a Bangladeshi origin, but she is a survivor or victim, so we'll let that go, shall we? Coming up on the 8:30 news and after the news.
LBC's been given access to an immigration raid alongside police and a Home Office minister. I'm LBC's Henry Riley at a car wash in Crawley.
You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Time for the headlines then. Thomas Watts.
The government is under renewed pressure to formally remove Prince Andrew's dukedom. Andrew, who denies wrongdoing, voluntarily gave up his titles last week ahead of the publication of his accuser Virginia Giuffre's memoir. Two abuse survivors have resigned from their roles in the National Inquiry into Grooming Gangs. The Home Office has rejected claims the process, which is yet to appoint a chair, is being watered down. Supporters of Maccabi Tel Aviv won't be able to buy tickets for their tie at Aston Villa next month. The Israeli club have decided to decline any allocation, despite ministers' efforts to overturn a ban on their fans attending the Europa League match. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for many, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Our lives are becoming more reliant on electricity than ever. We're streaming, cooking, working, charging our cars, even spying on our neighbours through the doorbell camera. So soon we'll need even more electricity. We could be harnessing our own homegrown energy, but we need to grow our electricity grid to connect it. Then we can make the country more self-sufficient. And leave you to keep an eye on Sandra at number 42 in case she steals your green bin. Again. Moving the grid forward moves us all forward.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
Well, if you're still listening, Ellie, your interview's got so much positive response. Mike Smith, if only we had more Ellies in the world, what a brave woman. Same subject, this comes in from John. Superb to hear that woman being so eloquent. I wish her the best of luck with her political career. This one, what, if you asked me not to give your name, okay, I'll respect that. What an eloquent and lovely young lady, such a balanced view of the world, a true survivor. Ellie represented herself so well, bless her. So, if you are still listening, excuse me, if you're still listening, Ellie, a lot of support for you there. Now, just before I was talking with Ellie, we were talking about police perhaps moving to a degree of sanity by not investigating so-called non-crime incidents. Jim's in Tenton in Kent. Thanks for hanging on, Jim. Your reaction to that. Good morning to you.
Good morning, good morning. Well, I think, yeah, again, it's more nonsense, isn't it? Because if you think about it, what is a non-crime? It's like me having to report my four-wheel car as
not a motorbike or something.
Yeah. So I think they're trying to please everybody. They're still trying to sort of hang in there. And, you know, after listening, it's just all crazy because they were running about chasing people for hurty words, as people are saying.
Yep.
But then not actually proven, just somebody suggested that somebody might have said something.
Yep.
They're running about, jumping on people, going to prison straight away. So now they're drawing back on that like they're doing us a favour. Meanwhile, people like Ellie still hasn't had justice. So it's all such nonsense. If they're not going to have anything to do with non-criminal things,
yep,
it shouldn't have anything to do with the police.
Have you got, Jim, I got this whiff of a sort of almost a cover-up or a whitewash with that inquiry as I was speaking to Ellie. There seems to be a sense, let's not get these people too involved. Let's try and almost try and knock the ball into the long grass, to use a cricketing expression. Did you sense some of that?
I sense the old insurance company strategy. You know that thing where they keep the claims going for years and years in the hope that it'll all just go away. Or even people will die of old age, you know, a little bit like the post office scandal, I suppose. That's another example of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, so they're just keeping it going, and eventually everyone will, you know, today's news is tomorrow's chip paper, as the old saying used to go.
It did. And there are proof of other, of course, inquiries, the Chilcot inquiry and others, where they go on and on and on, and eventually people just... they just tire and they forget about, not that some people will ever be able to forget, but the general public forgets about the Iraq war, and the report can come out and really the supposed guilty get away with it. Jim, thank you for that. Deb asks, if they've quit the panel, does that mean they've given up? What will happen now? Well, those two women have decided they don't want to be a part of it. We have to respect that, of course, Deb, but know that there will be enormous pressure, not least, I have to say, from the Conservatives. Kemi Bade not quite outspoken about this this morning, saying something needs to be done, so it won't go away. Jonathan says, separating victims in a data-gathering exercise potentially prevents corroboration or groupthink, reaffirming potentially false memories, giving the panel conducting inquiry a greater ability to cross-reference. The whole thing gets more difficult because obviously there are going to be a lot of raw emotions and now growing into political emotions. I hear you, but I think if they need help, they need sort of just backup, they should be able to get it. Mark in Leeds, Ellie's interview should be played in Parliament, and all those stalling and trying to water down the truth should be made to stand up and explain exactly what they've been doing. Inspirational woman, depressing response from the government. Well, we will keep them to account. You heard me ask Peter Carl, who is, in fairness, he's not the Home Secretary, he's the Trade Secretary, but he is in Cabinet. And we will keep the pressure on that. All right, coming up on 8:37 now to other matters. And LBC's been told that people are still exploiting the health and social care visa to work illegally in the UK. We were given exclusive access to an immigration enforcement raid at a car wash in Crawley alongside the Home Office Minister, Mike Tapp. It's one among hundreds of similar types of actions that happen across the country each week, targeting what are called cash-intensive businesses.
It's a pretty ordinary day at this Crawley car wash. If anything, slightly quieter due to the fact it's raining. But under the hoses, sponges and buckets, police suspect there's illegal working.
Where there is intelligence indicating that there is illegal working or criminality, it's important that policing and associated agencies take action against that. We know that businesses which have high volumes of cash are being used in order to launder the proceeds of drugs criminality, organised immigration crime and other types of criminality.
That's Caroline Payne from the National Crime Agency, one of the partners working on Operation Mechanise, targeting cash-intensive businesses. Led by the Home Office, police and immigration enforcement, there have been over 10,000 such visits and 7,000 arrests in the last year, an increase of 50%. And this is just one of the hundreds of such actions that take place each week. Joining Sussex Police on this visit is the Home Office Minister, Mike Tapp.
We're coming down hard on illegal employment to rip away one of those pull factors, which means people are coming to the country. So we're going to keep going on this operation and on these efforts to ensure that British workers aren't being undercut.
He's confirming that he's given us consent to enter the premises and speak to people here. We've explained the purpose of the visit.
Is your job to wash cars here?
Yeah.
He's working here part-time.
Now, there's currently around half a dozen officers in there at the moment questioning one man in particular, a man of Nigerian nationality who is suspected of working in breach of his visa. Mike Tapp again.
He told me he was here on a health and social care visa, but of course he's working cash in hand in a car wash. Now that's in breach of that visa's conditions, so he's being arrested for that. This is one of the issues we're seeing with these health and social care visas, that they're often being exploited. People turn up here and there's either no work or very limited work, which is why we've frozen that route to look at it again.
Okay, how long have you worked here? 2 months.
Now that man was arrested. He's been placed on strict immigration bail. That means he has to regularly report to the Home Office. And crucially as well, that business has been issued a civil penalty referral notice, which can involve a fine of up to £45,000 per illegal worker for a first breach like this.
LBC's Henry Riley reporting on that police operation, and you can watch Henry's report on the LBC app or at lbc.co.uk. 8:40 or 20 minutes to 9. And we are in the awards season. I was fortunate enough to be at the Daily Mirror Pride of Britain last night, and we'll have more on that later in the week. But last week there was another award series, and this was for Best Magazine, and the recipient of one of the Heroes Awards is TV and radio presenter, long-term friend Gloria Hunniford, who joins me on the line now. Gloria, good to have you on. I'm sorry I wasn't able to catch up with you. I was too busy yakking with the Prime Minister to get to see you last night. But
I noticed that you were with the great and the good there at that special table. But anyway, nothing else to be expected but that.
Gloria, let's talk a little bit about the Best Magazine, The Heroes. You are a hero. For what were you rewarded that particular trophy?
Well, I rarely correct you, but I am not a hero, because I said this on the night that really my daughter Karen was a hero, and I was delighted and very humbled to accept it, really, and I dedicated it in the end to her. Because Karen was only in her 30s when she developed breast cancer, and at that point, obviously some 20 years back, I didn't know any young girl who had breast cancer. We tended to think it was older people. But Karen, you know, was a Blue Peter presenter and went on to present, you know, This Morning and things like that. So she was well known to the public. And, of course, people were horrified. And I was, you know, I can't tell you the devastation when I discovered that Karen had breast cancer. And so, therefore, one has to find a way forward in life when, as a, particularly, I think, as a mother. I mean, I know every parent counts, but I think as a mum, when you've carried that child for 9 months and loved and treasured that child for whatever length of time you have that child, it's utter devastation. It goes to a depth of despair that you've never really reckoned on, and certainly the wrong way around in life.
Now, this, it's important to say, yours is very much what they call a sort of tabletop or desktop charity. It's run lean and mean, and you help all sorts of cancers across the whole country.
We do. Karen sadly died from breast cancer, but we, through our foundation in Karen's name, and I am the administrator, I'm the one who does it, along with my family, of course. And so we decided that we would really support all forms of cancer, whether it's eye cancer or bowel cancer or prostate cancer, as well, of course, as the breast cancer side of it, which we're particularly interested in. But Karen valiantly fought her cancer for 7 years, as many, many, many people listening to you have either done or are in the middle of. And so she became the teacher, you know. I learned so much from her, and I had to tap into her positivity that she was going to deal with it, maybe not cure it, but would live with it. And so I had to do a bit of a head job to actually tap into her positivity. And, you know, there's no easy way to, as a family, you know, as a parent, as a brother, sister, whatever, wife, husband, to sometimes you don't know how to deal with the person having cancer, how to talk to them or what to say. But, you know, it is... When the inevitable thing, not inevitable, I shouldn't say that, it wasn't inevitable even in Karen's case, but it did happen in the end. Yes. And then you have to find a way forward. So raising money for other people and other charities and other cancer charities is my healing, really. That was my way of coping, doing something positive against negative.
Gloria, I love you and I respect you. I would never contradict you, but you are a hero in my book, and I'm going to leave it there. Gloria Honeyford, thank you so much. Good best wishes to the family, Gloria. And you can get more details on Gloria's award in the Best Magazine, which is on sale as of today, 8:43. Let's come back to the conversation we're having about grooming gangs. So much still. Ellie Reynolds, if you're still listening, my goodness me. That, I mean, here's just another one. This is from Fumi. Ellie is a legend. Sadly, like many others, she will be suppressed until she's exhausted or too old to be bothered. I sent you information in the past about children's social care criminality, but no one cares. I sense Ellie. She doesn't look like to me like the sort of girl who's going to quit, to be honest. Kylie's in Chippenham. Kylie, your view on that conversation I had with that young woman. Good morning.
Hi. First of all, I want to say I have so much sympathy and so much admiration for people like Ellie.
Yes.
But I want to also thank you for correcting the statement made about Muslim grooming gangs.
Okay.
So, from my perspective, from the age of 15, I was in a relationship with a 25-year-old Bangladeshi man.
Right.
Who now, I went on to have 3 children with him.
Oh, right.
He was extremely abusive. He was an evil man.
Right.
Years later on, I now come to think, well, actually, I feel I was groomed. There was no drugs. There was no alcohol. It was just a very bad person. I don't consider it to be because he was Bangladeshi. I don't consider it to be because he was a Muslim. Nowadays, I lived as a Muslim for 10 years. I wanted to say that. But nowadays, I attend a church every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And recently, I moved my family from our local church to a church in a different town because of the Islamophobia being peddled by the people running that church and the conversation that I had with the rector about the Muslim grooming gangs. My point is,
What did the rector say or not say that upset you so much, Kylie?
Because I said to him that they're not Muslim grooming gangs. It's not because they're Muslim.
No.
So
no true Muslim
you will find
behave. No true Muslim would behave in that fashion. 100%.
100%.
I agree.
So I just wanted to say, and I said to him at the time, I said, when people aren't integrated very well and they live in communities, they hang around with people from those communities. So if you and I lived in a community where we all played backgammon, Nick, mm-hmm. and we only met with people who played backgammon, and you and I both turned out to be criminals, you wouldn't say, well, that's a backgammon grooming gang or a backgammon... It's just people who happen to know each other from groups.
Just one point I'd like to make. The person who abused you, did he operate individually or did he have...
Individually. Individually.
So do you see why gang, the word gang, by the way, not Muslim gang, I stress, but the word gang is appropriate in some circumstances.
Yeah, I would say Bangladeshi grooming gang, but then we've had grooming gangs of white people in Scotland, and we've had Christian, we can call them Christian grooming gangs, you know, the people in the churches. And
well, we've had a big problem with the Roman Catholic Church boys. Yeah,
But I think language is very, very important. I have 4 mixed-race children.
Was he the father of all of them?
He was the father of 3 of them.
3, I see.
Who have been subjected to racism and all kinds of horrible things because of all the things that are now being said about Asians and Asian grooming gangs.
And do you maintain a relationship with the father of 3 of your children?
No, not at all.
And do they ever ask, you know, where's dad or something?
No, because they know that he's... They attempted to contact him and he wasn't interested. And they know that he's not a very nice person. And I haven't even had to... I'm in contact with his family still, right. And his family are lovely. I'm in contact with many Bangladeshi people. I lived in Bangladesh for 6 months.
Right.
I speak Bengali. The thing is, this is not a, in my opinion, and, you know, people can have a different opinion, this is not a Muslim grooming gang thing, and it's not because they are Bangladeshi or because they are Pakistani. They're just men, very bad men, that happen to know each other, that all happen to come from one community.
But that is, of course, if they all come from the same community. I said, not in your abuser's instance, but that is why they get the name gang, the tag gang, if they are all Bangladeshi, as yours was. Carly, I have to leave it there. I'm so sorry, it's because I'm already late to the news. Again, credit to you. You have such strength and passion in your voice. I wish you a successful life and good time with your children. Thank you for that. It's 8:47, LBC News Headlines, Thomas Watts.
Ministers are facing growing pressure to change the law to formally remove Prince Andrew's titles. Two abuse survivors have resigned from their role in the national inquiry into grooming gangs, and supporters of Maccabi Tel Aviv won't be able to buy tickets for their tie at Aston Villa next month, even if a ban is overturned. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for many places, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 anti-clockwise. Junction 19 at Watford, it's because of an accident and only one lane is open. Clockwise, it's very busy up to junction 16 at the M40 from 14 at Heathrow after an accident. And also clockwise, it's still very busy onto the QE2 bridge from junction 29 at the A127 after an accident that happened earlier, but all the lanes are now back open. On the underground, the Northern line is now suspended between Kennington and Morden. Then there are severe delays on the rest of the line. Also severe delays on the Bakerloo line. Great Western Railway can't run between Redhill and Gatwick Airport, and the Gatwick Express remains suspended. That's the entire line.
This is LBC.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
A Southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
I like my private details on a need-to-know basis. In other words, I need to know them and you don't. That's why I use Bitdefender whenever I'm connected, working tirelessly in the background to protect me across all my devices, keeping my digital identity confidential, on the down low, on the hush-hush, trusted by the experts, used by the pros.
Bitdefender, a global leader in cybersecurity. Trusted, always.
Verify now at bitdefender.com.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Oh, total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protect your small business and understand cybersecurity.
It's 9 minutes before nine. We might come back to our conversation concerning known crime incidents, but let's go to a story. Well, I became aware of the impact of this in a powerful newspaper piece last week with the headline, A Grief No Father Should Ever Bear. And with me in the studio, I'll give you details of how you can see more. There's a documentary going to air tonight, The Killing of Charlie Crosser. And I'll give you details how you can see that on ITV later tonight. But Charlie's father, Martin, is in the studio with me and is going to explain more about what he's trying to do with the charity to make people aware of knife crime. Thanks, sir. Nice to meet you. Thank you for coming in, sir. And good to meet your wife, of course, just moments ago as well. If it doesn't cause you too much distress, can you take us back to those events in June 2023?
Yeah, it was July. Good morning, Nick. Yeah, nice to see you too. And yes, it was July where Tara and I got a knock on the door. Charlie, our 17-year-old middle child, had gone to a party in Warnham in West Sussex and, you know, he'd just gone off for a normal night out to have fun with friends. And we were the family that got that dreaded knock on the door at 12:30 on the early hours of the 23rd, to be told.
He was 17, doing what 17-year-old lads do.
Yeah, going out to a party at, you know, a farmhouse in a very rural, affluent area in West Sussex. We got a knock on the door to be told our son had been stabbed, that he was critical. We shot off towards the Royal Sussex in Brighton, which was the nearest major trauma centre, and we got diverted because Charlie had a traumatic cardiac arrest. And the very long story short is he went on to have another cardiac arrest. He fought for his life for 2.5 days, Charlie did, and he lost every milligram blood in his body. He had a ruptured bowel, ruptured spleen, and two traumatic cardiac arrests, which had led to brain damage, and sadly for us and for him, swelling on his brain, which when the surgeons operated, they weren't able to do a lot about. And we had to switch his life support machine off on at 7:40 on Tuesday, the 25th of July of that year, 2023.
When you first got to the hospital, did the doctors and others make explain how grave it was? What level of hope was there for the boy?
Yeah, we got taken into a room. Doctor walked in and straight away he said, "Mr. and Mrs. Kosser, I have to prepare you for the fact there's a significant chance your son is going to die. There's a significant chance Charlie won't survive this injury. I'm so sorry, I can't talk to you now." And with that, he left us, and we sat there for 4 hours with no information. And when he returned, I remember Tara, my wife, saying, "Is he alive?" And he said, "Yeah, he's alive, but he's really gravely ill." And what we were greeted with then, no parent, brother or sister, family member or friend should have to see. My daughter was only 15, Eloise, when she watched her brother die and saw him like that in intensive care.
I was going to say, how was it for you, the rest of the family?
Dreadful.
What's it done to the family?
It destroyed us. It's absolutely destroyed us. It's a very lonely place. People aren't very good at dealing with murder. I think you put murder in the equation and people avoid you. You know, I've had people in my life for many, many years that I very rarely hear from. And it's the same.
Why do you suppose that is?
I just think they don't know what to say. And I think they justify it by saying, oh, they won't want me around. And, you know,
so what should they say, Martin?
Just be there, be present, be kind. That's all we need. It's okay to come up to a family like ours and say, do you know what? I don't know what to say, but I'm here for you. That's wonderful. That's all we need. And we have. Please don't misunderstand me. We've had a small selection of people that have enabled us to breathe, that have been there for us, that have been incredible. But it's a very lonely place.
Now, you've tried to get something positive out of such horror, haven't you, with the charity? Tell the listeners what that is.
Yeah, so before I switched off Charlie's life support machine, I promised him that I would spend the rest of my life educating young groups of children about the dangers and immeasurable impacts of knife crime, and that everybody would know who he was. We set up the charity Charlie's Promise, but because it was my promise to Charlie, and we registered as a charity in April of last year. I've so far spoken to over 50,000 young children in the last 12 months.
50,000?
Yes. I'm in schools every day, across the UK. I go to primary schools. I've spoken to 5,000 8-year-olds, which we feel as a charity and as a family, and based on the feedback I get, and I get hundreds of messages a week from young children, that's the age we need to be.
What, eight?
Absolutely. Key stage two. I've spoken to a 7-year-old that carries a knife, Nick. In Kent. I won't say where, but in Kent.
Okay,
yeah.
Sure.
And you know, at that age, they're inquisitive. They're young. They want to feel safe. They want to learn. They've got loads of questions. We should be delivering knife crime education. Of course, we need to tailor it appropriately for the age demographic, but we should be doing that at primary school age.
What did that lad in Kent give as his reason for carrying it?
He was scared. He was getting bullied, and he was carrying it, in, as he said to me, for protection. Now, I can tell you now, you're 65% more likely to be stabbed by carrying a knife for protection. Most people that lose their life to knife crime are, in fact, knife carriers, and more often than not, with their own weapon.
What do we know about the circumstances of what happened to your son?
There was a girl who was being inappropriately, for want of a better word, touched up, harassed by two lads. One of them was my son's murderer. She ran up to Charlie and his friend, asking for help in tears. And my 5'7", 10.5-stone son approached Yura Viribas, 6 foot, 14.5-stone, and asked him to leave her alone. Viribas didn't like that, and he laid into Charlie. Charlie started defending himself, actually. He was very, really strong for a small lad. Viribas pulled a knife out of his man bag and stabbed my son multiple times in the chest. Yeah.
What in the... Do you call them classes or talks that you give?
Talks. There's a few things I aim to do in my talks. So the first thing I aim to do is bring Charlie to life. That's really important for Tara and I and the rest of my family, that everyone knows who... I call him Cheeks because of his cheeky smile. He was always known as Cheeks to me.
Oh, right.
So just to bring Cheeks to life. But the second thing is that so young people understand that one moment in time, the devastation that it causes. And the third thing is I signpost them to an organisation called Fearless, which enables them to report knife carriers 100% anonymously. They're part of Crime Stoppers without the fear of retribution. They don't even trace the IP address. The night Charlie was stabbed, a knife was mentioned once by our son's murderer and a shank twice, and nobody did anything about it. There was a mum at home at that farmhouse 100 metres away. We don't blame these young children, but if one of them had spoken to the mum and taken knife crime seriously and called the police or just ended the party, our little boy would still be alive. There were missed opportunities.
I can tell what keeps you going emotionally, because it's the love for your son and the promise you gave him as you said farewell. What keeps you going financially? How do you support this?
Well, for a long time it was really, really tough, because I'd had a middle management career, and the month before Charlie died I set up as self-employed insurance broker, but I hadn't had time. We're still a family that live hand to mouth, month in, month out, like most families.
Right.
And it was really tough because I didn't have any protection in place. Charlie, bless his heart, had some life insurance in an apprenticeship he'd started at Charterhouse, can you believe?
Really?
At 17. And it was enough for us to live for a year and start the charity, of which we volunteered for a long, long time. I've now been appointed as the full-time CEO. So.
Now, last minute or so we've got together, show tonight is called TikTok, Murder Gone Viral.
Yeah.
Explain the relevance of TikTok.
That's a hook for the show. When Charlie was fighting for his life, one of the ways I communicated with him, I found it really therapeutic, was as well as talking to him, I'd talk into my screen, hoping that he'd see the videos after. We're all here for you, Charlie. Grandma's come up today, your mum, you know, everybody's here. Sure. And it's those moments in time. And the very long story short, Nick, is I did a talk 13 weeks after Charlie died with a reformed gang member that I've worked with from time to time. He recorded a bit, put it on TikTok and told me it had almost 1 million views. I then thought, how can I educate people on a bigger scale? Which is why I joined TikTok. But it's one of the reasons why. It's a father's account of having his child murdered. Those moments in time that have been stolen from Charlie, but also me as his dad. They're raw, they're emotive, but my God, they're authentic. And they've got a lot of following because it's a window into the world of a family that have been through and continue to live through the worst possible thing.
Lastly, the first talk you give, did you find yourself crying?
Oh, yeah, God. It was too soon. I did it 13 weeks. I broke down many.
That's why I picked up on that. That's mighty soon.
It was too soon. It was too soon and reflection. And I had to take about 8 weeks away. But I'm no good when I stop, you see. When I do my talks, it's like Charlie's with me. Honestly, I feel his energy, I feel his aura, and I'm doing his work. I'm his messenger. My little boy would have achieved incredible things in this world.
Sure.
And is no because he's not here, he's still going to achieve credible things in this world. I'm convinced Charlie saved lives through the power of these talks, and I know that he'll continue to do that. We also want to open youth hubs. Ambitious plans, Nick.
How can people get involved? Where will they find more?
Well, charliespromise.org. Please, please, please look at our website. And if you want to see any of these TikTok videos, I'm at charliecosta17. But just tell everybody about Charlie. And and Fearless, please, again, if you don't mind me signposting, most people don't know about Fearless. For anybody that knows a knife carrier that's worried about someone that carries a knife, they can report them completely anonymously at fearless.org or on 0800 555 111.
Well, look at this. Lisa, this man is incredible. Tom, Charlie's dad is the bravest person you've had in a long time. John, it's not surprising. Charlie was a hero. Listen to his father.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you to all your listeners. Privileged. That's really kind.
Privileged to speak with you.
Thank you.
Martin Kosser. Charlie's Promise is the charity. It's 1 minute after nine on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, ministers are facing fresh calls to change the law to formally remove Prince Andrew's dukedom. He agreed last week to stop using his titles ahead of today's publication of his accuser Virginia Giuffre's posthumous memoir. It also emerged that Andrew has not paid rent on his home in the Windsor estate since 2003. The business secretary, Peter Kyle, was asked if that arrangement should continue.
On that particular matter, that's a lease for the Crown Estate, and those are matters for the King. They're not matters for government or myself. But let me be really clear, you know, because we are talking about a situation, and we're talking on the day when the memoirs of Virginia Giuffre are released. Once again, the spotlight is on the victims of Jeffrey Epstein. Let's stay focused on that. And
Prince Andrew has always denied any wrongdoing. Two abuse survivors have resigned from their role in the government's national inquiry into grooming gangs. They've expressed concerns about political interference and the treatment of survivors during the process, which has yet to appoint a chair. The Home Office has rejected claims it will shy away from reporting racial or religious issues around grooming. Ellie Ann Reynolds, one of the survivors who stepped down, has been speaking to Nick.
I'm disappointed. I am heartbroken, but equally as well, I'm not surprised. To me, it's, I've kind of seen this come in. It's another way to silence everybody so that the government and the authorities look like they're doing the job, but they're not. It's basically a whitewash.
Maccabi Tel Aviv fans won't be able to attend their tie at Aston Villa next month, even if a ban is overturned. The Israeli club have decided to decline any away tickets, despite ministers' efforts to reverse the decision by local officials in Birmingham. The government says it's deeply saddened. The former French president Nicolas Sarkozy has started a five-year sentence at a prison in Paris. The 70-year-old, who's lodged an appeal, was found guilty of conspiring to fund his election campaign with money from Colonel Gaddafi. Public sector borrowing increased to more than £20 billion last month, the highest September figure for 5 years. It was driven by the higher costs of debt interest, public services and benefits, piling further pressure on Rachel Reeves. And Nottingham Forest have appointed the former Burnley and Everton manager Sean Dyche as their new head coach. He takes over from Ange Postecoglou, who was sacked after failing to win any of his 8 matches in charge. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 94.33. That's up 29. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for most places. The rain heaviest and most frequent in the northwest. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 5 minutes after nine, Tuesday the 21st of October. Coming up in this hour, Boris Johnson will be at that COVID inquiry. And I'll be asking you, if you had a question to put to him, so not a series of abusive ideas or messages, if you had a question you could put to the Prime Minister about COVID, about his handling of that, what might that question be? Plus, also in this hour, the extraordinary story how asylum seekers are baptised in migrant hotel bathtubs, which enables them, obviously, to put in a claim to stay in this country. Now, Reverend Matthew Firth spoke last year in front of a panel of MPs about why so many migrants, he believes, are turning to Christianity.
I think that some of them are in very difficult situations, and I think they are seeing baptism as a ticket to something.
Well, that's absolutely true, and while not wanting for a moment to dispute a man of faith's holy views there, come on. It's a cover-up, really.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
A question for you about a question. If you had an opportunity to put a question to the Prime Minister, who's at the COVID-19 inquiry today, what would that question be? Would it be about schools? Would it be about not allowing, being allowed to meet perhaps elderly people, elderly relatives, to whom you had to say goodbye through a plain piece of glass? Would it be about Partygate? What would it be about whether he was on it soon enough? What might it be? Let's get the background before we explore some of the avenues and areas you might want to question. From LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark. All eyes on that inquiry later today then, Natasha. Morning.
Yes, morning, Nick. It's been 2 years since Boris Johnson nearly appeared at the COVID inquiry last time. So he was up in front of that inquiry, apologising for his role as Prime Minister. This is how he opened his testimony previously, by saying he was sorry for the pain and the loss and suffering people experienced during the pandemic.
Can I just say how glad I am to be at this inquiry, and how sorry I am for the pain and the loss and the suffering.
Sit down,
of
please.
The
please stop.
COVID Johnson. Victims.
Please sit down. I'm sorry if you don't sit down. I'm going to ask the ushers to get you to leave. Right, could ushers, please, could you ask them to leave?
Could I say, by your leave, that I understand the feelings of these victims and their families, and I am deeply sorry for the pain and the loss and the suffering of those victims and their families.
But that apology, just not enough for those victims of the COVID pandemic. His comments there, you heard, interrupted by protesters. They were ordered to leave the inquiry room. They basically stood up at the back holding pieces of paper spelling out the message, "The dead can't hear your apologies." And actually, when he left the COVID inquiry after 2 days of evidence, people were booing him on the way out. It was genuinely terribly well received by the public. 10 hours of evidence over 2 days. The former Prime Minister did admit that mistakes were made. We didn't lock down early enough. He wished he had done things differently, but he did insist that many other countries had no idea what the right course was to take. The entire hearing, if you remember, Nick, was surrounded on how on earth the former Prime Minister had managed to lose thousands of WhatsApp messages that were never handed to the inquiry.
Your phone was missing those 5,000 odd WhatsApps.
I don't know the exact reason, but it looks as though it's something to do with the app going down and then coming up again, it automatically erasing all the things between that date when it went down and the moment when it was last backed up.
Now today, Nick, this is into its next phase. It's now into the eighth part of the COVID inquiry, looking at the impact that the government's policies had on children. Last week, we heard from the former Education Secretary, Gavin Williamson. Of course, he was at the heart of making some of those decisions. He, however, accused Boris Johnson of throwing him under the bus, and he said that he gave parents false hope about schools reopening.
As we look back at it now, we should have had different actions in place in order to be better prepared for it. So I readily accept that there were many mistakes that were made both pre-start of the pandemic and in those early stages of the pandemic, because I don't think the DfE was any different to the Number 10 or the Cabinet Office or other departments that were leading the way in terms of dealing with that pandemic.
So Mr. Williamson speaking there, he also expressed regret that schools were not closed sooner. I wonder if Boris Johnson will agree with that today. Of course, we now know that so many of those kids less affected by COVID, they were still spreading COVID. Years later, of course, the impact is on them. Many experts blaming COVID, blaming those shutdowns for having basically a disadvantaged a whole generation of kids. But Nick, I think many people will just be, you know, listening to people like Gavin Williamson, listening to people like Boris Johnson, shoulda, woulda, coulda, you know, looking back with hindsight. Is far, far easier, isn't it, than making those decisions at the time. I think, you know, if anything, Boris Johnson's last appearance at the COVID inquiry, where he was booed on the way out, I think there will be many, many angry victims in the gallery today watching him.
LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, reporting. Let's bring to the conversation Fraser Myers, who's deputy editor of Spiked Online. Well, we've just looked it up, Fraser. This was convened, if you will, in spring of 2022. They started taking some evidence after that. So we're now entering the fourth year. This is longer than the damn pandemic. Good morning, Fraser.
Good morning. Yeah, I think that just illustrates the absolute farce of this inquiry. Sweden held a national public inquiry into their response to the COVID pandemic, and it actually wrapped up before ours even taking witness statements. And, you know, we have to ask, what is the purpose of an inquiry? You'd hope that it's to learn lessons, take things that maybe the next government, when they encounter a similar crisis, can act on. But really, actually, what we've seen in previous episodes, in previous hearings, is really it's just a chance. It's an opportunity for political grandstanding. You know, you've had various ministers harangued over their texts, often about their swearing, their use of language. And it seems like actually the sort of epidemiological conclusions have been written in advance. We know that they're just going to conclude that they didn't lock down early enough. Do we need to spend £100 million of taxpayers' money? That may not even be the case, by the way, because, you know, you bring up Sweden. They had some of the lowest excess death rates in Europe and they didn't have a lockdown. But there doesn't seem to be any debate over whether this was the right course of action. It seems to be that every witness is just saying that we didn't lock down early enough. So I don't think it's actually helpful at all. I don't think it's going to help us get to the bottom of what went wrong. I think it's a big waste of time and money and it's a bit of a farce.
Notwithstanding your views there, and I echo most of them, we do have the former PM. What area might you be keen or that is explored in the inquiry as regards his handling of this aspect of the crisis or the pandemic?
Well, I think the schools aspect is really important. That's the focus at the moment. You know, we do have to think about, you know, next time something like this happens, we need to realise that children cannot be deprived of an education for the best part of 2 years. That is going to have enormous long-term consequences. I think one of the problems with the pandemic and the way it was handled is that people were reacting to things in the moment and not thinking, well, what does this mean for next year? What does this mean in 5 years' time? You know, so that's something that really needs to be thought about. And children really should have come first. They were never really at risk, high risk of COVID. That didn't mean there was no risk, but they were not at high risk of COVID. And we should have done everything we can to have kept schools open, at least, or, you know, not in the same way as normal. Of course, there would have had to be social distancing, but we really should have prioritised keeping schools open. Hopefully that lesson will be learned. It does seem a bit more positive, the noises coming out from these sessions on that front. But let's see.
Fraser Myers is Deputy Editor of Spiked Online. Fraser, thanks for your input. Let's just recap that then. This was begun in June 2022. Some of you will be listening who lost loved ones during COVID, during the pandemic, and it might be quite nice to know what, in retrospect, what could have been done, what might have been done. Sadly, some of you will have gone to your grave and never knowing the full impact because of the extraordinary duration. There is something rather strange about this country when it comes to inquiries, isn't there? Because as my contributor just pointed out, in Sweden, it was dealt with, findings discovered before we even started taking testimony in this country. And if we go back to the conversation we had in the previous hour, the inquiry, which all parties agree, is desperately required into the so-called grooming gangs up and down the country, hundreds, possibly thousands of young women, sexually abused, raped, sexually assaulted, trafficked and everything else. So we can't get that one off the ground. So that will be years. And the one we have started is now entering its fourth year. Why are we so inept at inquiries? Maybe we need an inquiry into that. We'll take your views. It's 9:15. LBC News headlines then. Thomas Watts.
Ministers are facing fresh calls to change the law to formally remove Prince Andrew's dukedom. Two abuse survivors have resigned from their role in the government's national inquiry into grooming gangs. And fans of Maccabi Tel Aviv won't be able to go to their tired Aston Villa next month, even if a ban on their attendance is overturned. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for most, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25. This is heading towards Junction 19 at Watford, anti-clockwise. It's because of an accident where only one lane is open, and those delays stretch all the way back to Junction 21 at the M1. Also delays on the M25 clockwise to Junction 16 at the M40 from 14 at Heathrow. That was following an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. So on the M3 northbound to the M25 junction after a car broke down earlier, although that's now been recovered. On the trains, no Great Western Railway services between Redhill and Gatwick Airport, and still no Gatwick Express. The entire line suspended, and no Northern Line services running via Bank, and severe delays on the rest of the line.
LBC.
Dulux Trade Vinyl Matte Paint is made by us.
And approved by professional painters like me and you.
It's made for great flow and open time.
So it goes on easy as you like, every time.
And it's made for ultimate opacity and coverage.
A couple of coats and you're good to go.
Dulux Trade Vinyl Mat. It's made by us.
And approved by you. And me.
For a great all-rounder, pick up a can of Dulux Trade Vinyl Mat today.
Call the Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
I'm fulfilling more international orders thanks to working capital support.
Export insurance protects my business against the risk of not getting paid by an overseas buyer.
At UK Export Finance, we help businesses export with confidence. Between 2024 and 2025, we provided over £14 billion of government-backed finance and insurance to help businesses grow overseas. Search UK Export Finance to find out how we could help you win export contracts, fulfil orders, and get paid.
Half term is here. I've 100% got this. They will keep a lid on the glitter, and they will not ambush my work calls. But if all else fails, McDonald's Seal Drop.
Get 15% off the whole menu when you spend £15 on food and drink. Redeem this half term only on the McDonald's app. Fees apply to delivery. 18 plus, one-time use per week until the 2nd of November. Participating restaurants, T's and C's apply.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough. Wow.
Shooting star. Wow.
Made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
It's not just a matter of time either, is it? It's the money. The Chilcot inquiry cost more than £13 million. The Leveson inquiry was £5.5 million. What takes so long? What is it about the British system that makes it drawn out to this level? For the love of God, and I'm not here to defend Boris Johnson, Matt Hancock, Professor Whitty, any of those people, but everyone's life moves on. You're not going to have as perfect memory of what you did 5 years ago as you would have done if you were asked a year after the events rather than 5 years after the events. As I've just said, we're now entering the fourth year of this damn inquiry, and one where clearly there is such impetus to get going the grooming gangs inquiry, and you've got two survivors who want to sit in the inquiry. They can't get that one going, and this they can. I mean, the Bloody Sunday is the bloody takes the biscuit at £191 million. God knows what these lawyers, barristers and junior solicitors are being paid. It is ridiculous. So to do the politician thing of asking the question and then answering, do we need an inquiry? Absolutely we do. Do we need to ensure that, God forbid, we had another COVID? Yeah, absolutely we do. Would it be helpful that we do it this decade? Well, it wouldn't hurt, would it? You mark my words, this will not be resolved this time next year. The cost will lumber on, millions and millions. Colleagues just told me that this inquiry is projected to cost more than £200 million. So that will put it at the grisly top of the league for spending of these inquiries. More than £200 million. To tell us what? A lot of politicians did a lot of stupid things. They were caught out in the fog of war, or the fog of war, whichever you prefer. Decisions were made that were wrong. Probably in most instances for the right reasons. They were trying to get it right. They didn't get across it as quickly as they could have done. Some of the advice was obviously flawed. The closure of schools was wrong in most instances. In most instances. Because we said discover that children didn't really pass it on. Do we honestly need to spend £200 million to find that? Russ, you'll be the first caller. Just want to make a point here, which Mark Sells in Cambridgeshire points out. You've referenced the Chilcot inquiry to the watering down of the grooming gangs inquiry. Remind listeners, before Chilcot, we were served up the government-friendly Hutton report that concluded Blair's government had done nothing wrong. The public outcry was so great it was rejected, and we demanded Chilcot. Let's keep up the pressure for an incisive and independent Chilcot-type report and not a Hutton type that seems to be gestating. That's specifically addressed to the grooming gangs. Let's pick up on the idea of the COVID inquiry. Russ is in Crowborough. Russ, if you had a question or you had input on it, what would you be saying? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for taking the call.
Not at all.
I'll just echo really pretty much everything you said, really. As far as I was concerned, the only thing that would concern me was the Partygate episode. But going back to when COVID first broke, we didn't know about, the children and how they would transmit mm-hmm. back into the household. So, you know, as far as I was concerned, Boris did, I thought, a really good job. I feel like I'm pretty much the only person who thinks that nowadays. But
what, in closing the schools for as long as he did? Do you really think that was necessary then, Russ?
I don't think we knew, honestly. I think the problem was that we were trying to, you know, obviously contain this epidemic. And, you know, if we're going to stop people going to work, you know, the incubation of that kind of disease was, you know, very prevalent at school.
Right. What purpose is served by taking month after month, year after year, and racking up tens of millions of pounds?
Well, there isn't in hindsight, and hell, there isn't, is there? But again, Boris said at the start of this, you know, when we first went into it, that we'd be making a lot of mistakes on the way.
We certainly did make a lot of mistakes, and I think we're making a mistake for how we're handling the inquiry as well. Russ, thanks for getting started on that. Kathleen's on Hayling Island. Kathleen, you're on the radio. Good morning. What would you want to hear of today?
Good morning, Nick. The question I would like to ask Mr. Johnson is, why did he put old people first?
Why did he
close the schools endanger our children's futures for old people who had had their lives? I would have preferred to have emphasised children who were about to start their lives.
He would probably point to scientific guidance, I think, Kathleen, is what he would say back to you.
Yes, and that's very good. I'd like to ask you to ask him, what's the definition of the scientific guidelines? Because the scientific guidelines were brought up when it was things that suited them and not when it wasn't. I think the scientific guidelines told them not to have parties secretly while we were all being told to stay at home.
What are your memories? What's most vivid memory from those dark days of COVID, Kathleen?
Well, one of them, knowing how children were being harmed, was old people saying to me, well, they've got their lives ahead. We need to be shelved. We need to be looked after more carefully than them, because we're more vulnerable than they are, and they've got their lives ahead of them.
Yes.
That's one of my memories that I don't like to remember, to be honest, Nick.
No, it was very, very tough. Lastly, do you share with me absolute confusion and anger that it's going to cost more than £200 million and take it probably 5 to 6 years, this inquiry?
Yes, I do, because I would rather people like Michelle Moan, Michael Gove and the rest of the Cabinet, including people like Dominic Cummings, who weren't in the Cabinet, taken to the cleaners to pay us back for all the money they made out of us.
All right. I'm not sure that Dominic Cummings or Michael Gove, but certainly there's a very live conversation about Baroness Moan and whether we're going to get back that, what is, last week it was £145 million. It was initially £124, but it's gone up with interest. Kathleen will take more of your calls on that in a moment. But to another story, one I briefly mentioned at the beginning of this hour, how migrants are being baptised in asylum hotel baths by a Christian charity. This is an investigation by one newspaper, the Daily Telegraph. Asylum seekers have undergone baptisms in this accommodation despite concerns they're going through the process simply to gain rights to stay in the UK. Care Links, a registered charity linked to the Christadelphian sect, has visited migrant hotels across Britain to conduct baptisms, and a number of migrants who become Christadelphian after arriving in the UK have in recent years won asylum under our old friend the European Convention of Human Rights, by arguing they'd face persecution if they returned to their home countries as Christians. Well, let's put some of this to Ivan Sampson, who's principal solicitor at the firm Privatus, and joins us now. Are these people simply gaming the system, would you say, Mr. Sampson? Good morning.
Well, look, as a solicitor... Good morning, Nick. As a solicitor who deals with asylum and human rights cases, I'd say this sort of practice raises serious credibility issues. The whole asylum system relies heavily on the applicant's honesty and the consistency of their evidence. So when you have reports of large numbers of people being baptised in hotel bathrooms, it inevitably casts doubt on the authenticity of these conversions.
What needs to be done to address this if it is an abuse?
Well, look, the Home Office and the tribunals themselves have a system of trying to weed out disgenuine claims trying to weed out those that are contrived or opportunistic. And what they have is they look at the plausibility and the consistency of the evidence. the knowledge, the motivation, practice of their new faith. Quite often you'll get a church giving a letter or a minister giving a letter saying they've accepted this individual into their parishioners, and they accepted their conversion. There have been doubts cast about these letters as well. The Refugee Convention wasn't really designed for people converting once they get left the places where they're being persecuted. It was really designed for people who were being persecuted where they were at and they were fleeing that persecution. I think we need to have another look at the Refugee Convention and take into account people using these types of tactics strategically to try and avoid being sent back to their country.
Is it an automatic order that you will not be deported if you claim to be, or if you have been christened as a Christadelphian or a Christian?
No, it's not an automatic order at all. There's an assessment by the Home Office on whether it's a genuine conversion or not. They look at the evidence. And quite often, I've been in interviews, Home Office interviews. I was with a young girl, actually. She was only 14 years old. She'd converted from Muslim to Christianity. And the Home Office spent most of the 3-4 hours testing her on the Bible, her knowledge of the Bible. Now, I'm not sure it's a theological test is the way you test it, because a lot of people are not literate as well. But it's very, very difficult to assess someone, because how do you test somebody's heart? It's very difficult. Short of using polygraph lie detector tests, I don't see how it can be done. So it really is about the consistency of the evidence, the plausibility, the demeanor, how they give the evidence. It's a very difficult task for the Home Office and the tribunals.
We heard from the previous Home Secretary, we hear from the current Home Secretary, they're doing all they can to try and speed up the process. So in a related question, are you seeing that the appeals are going through quicker? Go ahead.
No, not at all. I was in a Home Office interview a couple of days ago in Newcastle, and I said to the Home Office interviewer, I said, you're supposed to be speeding things up. It's been 2 years we've been waiting for a decision. Where's the speed? Please tell me. Explain to me why it's taken you 2 years and we still don't have a decision.
How did she respond?
Well, he said it's a complex case. That was his response.
Well, they're all going to be complex, aren't they, Mr. Simpson?
Well, of course they are, and you have to test the evidence. But no, I haven't seen that. That having been said, there are some countries where they have speeded up. Countries like Syria, where there's a 95% grant rate. So I was in an interview on a Friday, and they were granted refugee status on the Monday. So those countries with high grant rates, I accept, there's been acceleration.
Ivan Sampson, your principal solicitor with the firm Privatus. Thank you. Coming back to this idea, water joke, as migrants are baptised in the hotel bathrooms, the sign of hotels that we're paying for, by the way. Here's a couple of cases for you. In February 2025, so this February, a convicted sex offender from Iran was found to be a genuine found not to be a genuine convert, only worshipping from home, but was still granted asylum as a judge ruled he would be persecuted if deported. In November last year, a Kurdish Iraqi was given asylum despite his initial claim being rejected, when he was found to know almost nothing about Christianity in his first Home Office asylum interview, despite claiming to be a Christian. A spokesman for the Church of England says, as our guidance says, clergy must exercise careful discernment when supporting asylum seekers seeking baptism, especially where faith forms part of a claim, and manipulating or falsifying conversion for personal gain is clearly unacceptable. Well, clearly it is, but clearly it's going on, and these people are absolutely conning us. We'll pick up on your reactions after the 9:30 news. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari. On LBC, the headlines, Thomas Watts.
Ministers are facing growing pressure to formally remove Prince Andrew's dukedom as his accuser's book goes on sale. Andrew voluntarily gave up his titles last week, but he'll technically continue to hold them unless they're removed through a change in the law. Two abuse survivors have resigned from their role in the government's inquiry into grooming gangs. The Home Office has rejected claims it will shy away from reporting racial or religious issues. Boris Johnson is due to give evidence to the UK COVID-19 inquiry for the second time. The former Prime Minister's testimony will focus on the impact of the pandemic on younger people and decisions taken around education. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for many places, the rain heaviest and most frequent in the northwest, a high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
Hi, babe. Yeah, mad day. So, do you fancy staying in tonight instead? Delivery fee is now from 99p on the Mackey's app, and we can get a free chicken Big Mac if we spend £15. So, you in? Of course you are.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. £15 spend only on main day food and drink via delivery until the 19th of October. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Participating restaurants. Serving times and T's and C's apply.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quaterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
Of course, coming in on this absolute farce with migrants being baptised in the bathroom of asylum seeker hotels. Look, I'm sure the men and women who are doing the baptisms have no doubt they're people of faith, but can they not see they're absolutely being taken for fools? We'll take your calls on that. But John in Enfield, you've been waiting to hang on about the COVID inquiry. And second time that Boris Johnson will be there. What question would you put to him? John, good morning to you.
Yeah, Nick, the question I always like to ask him was, you know this Matt Hancock, the health minister? And I think he wasn't the only one, but they used their private email services to negotiate the COVID contracts, where the government ruling is that you don't use your private emails, you've got to use the government email service just to see what's going on. And I personally remember this, but your producer, I'm not sure what I should say, but I personally remember at the time, the fraud office wanted to investigate Matt Hancock's private emails to see what was going on, but Boris Johnson stopped the fraud office from investigating. So my question is, why did you stop it?
I don't actually, there are so many allegations, claims and counterclaims, I don't specifically remember that. But was this a part of a number of senior cabinet ministers, where they didn't get into their private emails? Is that the same story you're referring to, do you think, John?
Give you a name. Now, there's a guy in his...
I'm always nervous when you say you give me a name. Just tell me, you want to give me a name of who, just so I can clarify that?
There's a person in Matt Hancock's constituency called Alex Bourne, who used to run the Cook in Little Burnham.
Oh, I remember that. This was the pub. Yep. This was the publican.
And he was ordered a £30 million contract.
Yeah, but we do know all of this, John. So, John, this is in the public domain, all of what you're saying now.
Yeah. But what I want to know why, and the government stated would not search Hancock's private email,
right,
arguing a sweep was neither necessary nor proportionate. Right. Why?
Okay, I don't know, but I did ask what questions you want to ask of the Prime Minister. So, former Prime Minister. So, thank you for that. You want to know more about? I fortunately someone has called that story up, so I have got some memory of it now. It does seem a very strange thing to do. Thank you for that. Right, we're going to take your calls on that asylum con in just a moment. But the story that we did earlier in the show, which is front page news for at least two, if not three of your newspapers, is what Lemmy would say is a victory for common sense. Now, the Metropolitan Police will no longer investigate non-crime hate incidents, ending the practice of officers having to police toxic culture war debates. This decision has coincided with Scotland Yard saying yesterday that comedian Graham Linehan will face no further action after he was arrested at Heathrow last month over three gender-critical tweets. Mr. Linehan, who, if you're interested, is 57, co-created shows including Father Ted and the IT Crowd, had been detained on suspicion of inciting violence in relation to posts on X. Well, I explored that in the first hour of the show with Connie Shaw from the Free Speech Union. They're assisting Graham Linehan with his case. They're now suing the Met. She gave me her reaction to the decision from the police.
Obviously, it's a bittersweet win. I suppose that this baseless investigation into Graham has been dropped. The process is the punishment, and what happened to Graham was so horrific and so traumatizing to the extent that Graham was released from custody only when a nurse discovered that his heart, his blood pressure was so high that he needed to go to A&E. As he said in that clip, Graham has been at the behest of trans activists for 8 years, and he's had to leave the UK because of it. And when he returned to the UK to go to a trial at the behest of a different trans activist, a separate trial, he was arrested on the spot. He was returning to the UK for a legal matter elsewhere. The police didn't even think they could just ask him for an interview. They chose to arrest him, originally claimed on the suspicion of inciting violence, which isn't actually a term used in our statute books, and then said that it was about he was arrested on suspicion of stirring up hatred on the basis of sexual orientation, despite the fact nowhere did he mention someone's sexual orientation. So it seems like the police were very confused. And then they placed the draconian bail conditions, which meant he wasn't allowed on X, which we challenged and then they dropped. And then they changed that to saying that he couldn't contact any of the victims. Now, who those victims were was very unclear, and it was proven that there were no victims when the judge overturned that bail condition, claiming that it was so broad that supposedly Graham couldn't tweet anything in case a trans activist, anyone who was offended by what he was saying. So we've managed to get all of Graham's bail conditions overturned at the Free Speech Union. And it seems that the police have been very confused here. They didn't even turn up to the hearing to get them overturned to defend themselves.
That was Connie Shaw from the Free Speech Union. We'll pick up with you, Daniel, on that conversation as the first call on that. But we are also talking about this asylum hotel, Con, and Max is in Dubai. I've been hanging on the line for some time. Max, the point you want to make, good morning.
Hi, Nick. Yeah, thank you for having me on. So about a month ago, I went to visit a friend in the Defence Academy of the UK in Shrivenham, where they train all the majors, colonels, they do intelligence, technical training courses, very secure place.
Okay.
And my friend told me, and I saw, that they are housing dozens and dozens of Afghan asylum seeker families in the service family accommodation at these bases. Never mind, you know, talking about the security risk. But some of these people, if they're not properly vetted and if they're lying on application forms over religion or other issues, that's a huge security risk to us. And they're also being prioritised. Now, I've heard this from several of my friends in the forces. They're asking our service families to go unaccompanied, not to take their families to these bases so that they can actually fit in these Afghan asylum seeker families. And it's just, to me personally, I just think it's outrageous and a symptom of the greater malaise.
What are the service personnel who are there, what do they make of it, Max?
They're not particularly happy, especially if you're, say, if you're a sergeant major or you're a major or a colonel and you're posted there and then you're being asked not to bring your family because they don't have sufficient accommodation there because they're giving that accommodation to Afghan asylum seeker families.
And roughly how many families do you think were there, Max?
Tough. I was there for 2 days and I saw probably 8-9 families just within a couple of hours of walking around.
Too soft, lastly, isn't it? The UK in this area, finally, Max?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thanks for your input on that. Have yourself a good day in Dubai. Let's talk about this, I would say, breakthrough, really. Common sense at last returning to some policing. Daniel's in Golders Green. You were former police, is that right, Daniel? Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning, Nick. Like your dear mum, I was in the job. I served for over a decade as a frontline Metropolitan Police officer.
Right. My goodness me. You enjoy it?
I absolutely loved it. But one of the reasons why I left, sadly, was due to the collapse of common sense in policing, mainly from the senior management, from what was the Association of Chief Police Officers, ACPO, that became the MPCC. And I've got to tell you that I believe, Nick, that a vast majority of frontline police officers and a vast majority of members of the public really support the Met's announcement that they will no longer investigate non-crime hate incidents, because I think people, both the public and the police, want the police to focus on priority crimes like violence against women and girls, mobile phone snatches, robberies, vehicle thefts from people's driveways and burglaries. Those are the crimes that police should be dealing with, not hurty words on social media.
How did the frustration show itself to you on a daily basis?
That's a great question, Nick. So the frustration showed to me as a frontline police officer on a daily basis by being diverted from serious 999 calls, like burglaries, like vulnerable females being sexually assaulted, to dealing with mental health incidents, petty arguments between neighbours, social housing disputes, you know, effectively non-policing matters. And this Graham Linehan incident, I found really horrifying on many levels. Firstly, it was a colossal waste of police resources. And secondly, I don't believe that the actions of the Metropolitan Police took in arresting him in such a heavy-handed manner were either proportionate, legal, accountable, or necessary. And those are the tests police officers have to look at when you are conducting any form of arrest inquiry.
The senior officers, the sergeants or whoever it was that were directing you, did they know themselves that this was nuts, or do you think they were buying into this approach?
That's a great question again, Nick. So I believe that many of them did, and we had some fantastic sergeants who are effectively the gatekeepers of frontline policing. And there were some absolutely brilliant, experienced, no-nonsense sergeants who've been this, who said, we are not, they said to the call handlers, we are not sending out, I'm not sending out my officers to this call. It's a load of rubbish. Send it back to the council, send it to the appropriate authority. But unfortunately, over the last decade, I think there's been a terrible lapse in recruitment, in that the sergeants now, some of them barely have 18 months, 2 years service, and they don't know what they're doing. And I think you need that appropriate level of experience and knowledge in policing at the sergeant level, which is lacking at the moment.
And how much might you block your career progression if you're one of the sergeants who doesn't send out on a meaningless shout?
Oh, you're over. You're finished, Nick. Forget about promotion. If you stand up to this nonsense, you are blacklisted, you've got a black mark against your name on your file, and you will not progress. And that's why, unfortunately, the senior levels of policing nowadays are infested with what I call academic left-wing lunatics, frankly, who are more interested in, you know, policy frameworks and strategic partnership with communities than actually helping members of the public and boosting the morale of frontline police officers.
Lastly, do you miss any of the police now that you've left the job?
I do, Nick. I miss it terribly. I speak to my former colleagues who've left as well, and we miss it. You know,
What is it you miss? Because at times it seems like you're, what is it, lions led by donkeys at times?
It is. That's a great expression, Nick. It really is. But do you know what I miss? I miss the variety. I miss the excitement. I miss the camaraderie. And I miss the sense of satisfaction in helping victims of crime. You know, Nick, I can think back to when I helped a vulnerable woman who was actually out on a Friday night, and she was seriously sexually assaulted by an asylum seeker who turns out should never have been in the country, overstayed. It's just, you know, and I remember helping him, went to court, and he was sentenced to about 12 years in prison, and then he was deported back to a West African country. Mm. Nick, I miss that, and I miss the camaraderie, and, you know, no job is like policing. It's an amazing job, it's a unique job, but unfortunately it's been completely destroyed.
And that was from the front line, 10 years in the job. Daniel, thanks for going into such detail. We'll continue the conversation. It is undoubtedly a victory for common sense, non-crime. Why have they ever got involved in non-crime when you think about it? Why on earth are police getting involved in that? And Julian will be talking to you about these asylum hotels, this con that's going on. These con with the, putting the con in convert. That's the reality of these people getting these baptisms in these hotel bathrooms. 9:45 now, LBC News headlines, though. Thomas Watts.
The government is facing fresh demands to change the law to formally remove Prince Andrew's dukedom. Two abuse survivors have resigned from their role in the government's inquiry into grooming gangs, and the former French president Nicolas Sarkozy has started a 5-year sentence at a prison in Paris. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for many places, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. So many problems on the trains this morning. Gatwick Express services remain suspended. Also, Great Western Railway can't run between Redhill and Gatwick Airport. Thameslink are delayed by about 40 minutes between St Pancras and Blackfriars. And also, Thameslink and Great Northern can't run between Royston and Cambridge. And that's because of an investigation. On the Underground, no Northern line between Moorgate and Morden. Then there are severe delays on the rest of the line and also severe delays on the Bakerloo line. On the M25, there are anti-clockwise queues to junction 21 at the M1 after an accident, and delays on the North Circular Road northbound up to the A12 after a car broke down early. It's just been recovered, but there are delays from the Ilford flyover.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
The point of inquiries is, of course, to use honesty to ensure that bad things don't happen again. So is there any point talking to Boris Johnson?
James O'Brien on LBC.
Step aboard the legend of the Titanic, London's award-winning exhibition devoted to the world's most famous ocean liner at Dock X Canada Water. Walk her decks, explore her cabins, discover her secrets. With 360-degree projections, VR, an interactive metaverse, artifacts and more. Book your tickets today at legendoftitanic.com.
Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest, you probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Get next summer sorted. Book a Jet2 holiday now and take your pick of our best rooms, flights and hotels. You'll get 22 kilograms of baggage included. And right now, there's £120 off per couple with MyJet2. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person and lock in the price for next summer. Jet2 Holidays. Package holidays you can trust. After National Protective, subject to availability and conditions.
Mickey could try to sell his car privately. Or get it sold today with We Buy Any Car. He could spend days on end trying to sell to a bunch of time wasters. Or sell in a flash and head to the fun fair with the kids. Proper gutted. Or proper impressed. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
Why are we so wretchedly naive or gullible? Coming back to these ideas of the migrants who are baptised in asylum hotel bars, so we're paying for the hotel room, then we're going to say that they can become a Christian so they can't be sent back home. The organisation involved CareLinks advertises its baptism online. The last year for which it has figures, 2024, said that more than 260 individuals in 30 different countries, by the way, not all in the UK. This is what you have to do. You have to say you arrive here. Let's just, for the purpose of debate, say you arrive here as, I don't know, as a Hindu, and you want to stay in this country. Or perhaps you're an agnostic, it doesn't matter. This is what you have to say. I want to be a Christian. Then, well, you need to read the introductory Bible basics book and then repent for your sins. Have you read the book? Yeah, I read it, yeah. I enjoyed it, it was good. I really enjoyed it. Do you repent your sins? Yeah, I do, yeah. You're in. And then the judge will almost certainly smile on you favourably. In February 2025, a convicted sex offender from Iran was found not to be a genuine convert, was only worshipping from home, but was still granted asylum when a judge ruled he'd be persecuted if deported. In November of last year, a Kurdish Iraqi was given asylum, despite his initial claim being rejected, when he found he'd known virtually nothing about Christianity. Why do we get taken in? Julian's in Godalming. Julian, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Yes, sir. Good. Your point is...
the first thing is, I don't know CareLinks, and I know Duncan, who's been featured in this article very, very well. He's a very, very good man.
Right.
And he will... he wrote the book... Bible Basic.
Right.
He will take people through the book and they genuinely, and I say genuinely, want to be baptised into Jesus Christ. Now...
Why is it when they suddenly find themselves in a hotel room in the United Kingdom they choose to do this, do you imagine, Julian?
Well, in the first place, some of them have left their country because they are Christians.
Well, they won't need to be christened then.
Well, they haven't been baptised and they want to be baptised. Adult baptism is very different from christening. It's, you can't, as a child, say that you want to have all your sins forgiven and commit your life to Christ. You have to be an adult for that. So you need an adult baptism. This thing about being baptised in bars...
Well, have they been confirmed at 13?
Confirmation isn't baptism.
But if you believe in the faith and you're practicing Christian, I take on board, obviously, as a child, you have no say in it, but at 13, you can seek confirmation. I wonder how many have had that.
Well, that's a different thing to being baptised.
No, it's not. It's practicing your faith, isn't it?
No, baptism is being buried in water.
Yeah. But the confirmation that you go through typically at 13 is an indication of your belief in the Christian faith, isn't it? You confirm your faith. You don't think in some instances these people are using it as an attempt to try and stay in the country?
Obviously, there's always going to be one or two that will do
one
that.
One or two.
But if you take the situation of somebody who is being baptised in a bath in one of these hotels where the vast majority of them are Muslims, who are very, very anti people who become Christians, it's a very brave thing to do. It's not something which is just taken lightly. And I know that some of these people have found their lives very, very different once they become Christians and living in those hotels.
In what way do their lives become different?
Well, they become persecuted by the other people who are Muslims in the hotel.
In what way do they become... how does that persecution show itself?
Well, in ways that they become difficult. They can't feed with other people. They have to almost live their lives alone because the Muslims are very, very strong in those hotels, and you can imagine what it's like. If you commit to be a Christian, that is not an acceptable thing to Muslims.
Even though it might assist in your attempt to stay in the country?
It's not always easy. You've seen how many rejections there are of people who are in this country, and just saying that you're a Christian doesn't mean very much at all for the...
Well, the Daily Telegraph does cite some examples where it has helped people, one from Iran, one from... one from Iran, one from Iraq, there were Kurdish Iraqi.
Yeah, there were two of them that have been named out of thousands that have become Christians. You're always going to get that.
Hold on. This care link's 260 in 30 different countries, so we're not at thousands, Julian.
No, it wasn't anybody from care links, but you're quoting that there's those situations where they were found not to be true Christians.
You're clearly a much better human being than I, because I, of course, there will be one or two, but I see it as vast, mostly an abuse, but you see it the other way around. There will be one or two who abuse it, and most of them are genuine, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, totally lovely. Yeah, right. And Duncan is off to the Ukraine for about the fourth time this year, next week, to go and help people out there who want to be baptised. None of those are people who are looking for immigration, not in Ukraine.
No.
He's a very genuine man who goes travelling around the world helping people, and I think this abuse is totally unacceptable.
All right. Julian, thank you for all the background. And I absolutely respect your position. I'm afraid it's probably years of being in the news business that I see the cynic or the cynical side of it automatically. Julian, thank you for your side. Let's see what Mike in East of England makes of it. Mike, what can you tell me? Good morning. Mike, are you there? No.
Hi, Nick.
Hello, sir. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi, Nick. Morning. I'm a serving member of the armed forces for 22 years. Still going.
Thank you.
What is the asylum thing is becoming a pain for members across the board. So what it is, about 2 months ago, we had an incident outside camp of the family's accommodation where asylum seeker was, one of the Afghan residents was arrested due to an assault on a British soldier and shouting words off. I'm not going to repeat the words.
Thank you.
But he was arrested due to that, and members of the armed forces have raised this concern throughout our time since this started, of the uncertainty of security of our families and stuff. Now, we've been pushed to the side. We've got soldiers living in accommodations that have mold, mildew. But it's the thing that gets me is that these individuals are getting priority treatment, whereas we have been told to wait out. We have been told if you complain too much about your property, you're going to get pushed out and make room for the asylum support for the Afghans. So people like myself and others are paying money from our pockets to repair our housing, use things like water damping, leakage and stuff like that, because we are just not getting the response that we need from the contractor to get to the house repairs as fast as we can.
How now, widespread is this, Mike? I know it's not your real name, but how widespread is it?
Yeah, this is across the board.
Okay. And I think there's a time delay. How angry is this making service personnel?
Well, the thing is, though, when you look at me across the board, even the Caribbean, to join the army 22 years ago, to be part of a system where the morale was decent, we had incentives, we had a lot of things happening at the time, right, to look now to see there's not much little going on. But the one thing that's pissing soldiers off is that when you look at the TV and you hear the news of asylum seekers being given brand new houses, accommodation, they get money and things like that, that demoralized soldiers. It demoralized the young soldiers, whether that they're coming from the slums of Manchester, Reading, wherever the case it is, knowing that the military, so I'm not going to mention the camp, but the camp I'm currently in, we have no power. We are now renting generators to power the camp that we are currently in.
What I want you to do is say, talk off air, and apologise for some outdoor language or barrack room language, so I apologise if anyone was offended, Mike, which isn't your name. I'd be really grateful if you tell my colleague where it is, and then we won't mention your involvement. If that's correct, that service personnel are being given inferior accommodation to that compared to people who are asylum seekers in this country, that is something we want to get involved in. Thank you for your service, Mike, or whatever your actual name is. Please just mention the camp if you're prepared to, and we'll look at that. Talk to my colleague off air. Let's move. I'm going to get one more call in on the asylum hotels. Sorry, the baptisms, I should say. Paul's in Watford. What do you think is going on here, Paul? How genuine is it as you see it? Good morning.
Hello, Nick. I'm afraid I'm in the same boat as you. I mean, I am actually a Roman Catholic.
Right.
And as you said, I mean, all these people are having a road to Damascus moment, please. You know,
it just seems incredibly convenient, doesn't it? Or coincidental, whichever way, coincidental or convenient.
Well, you know, if you go to, a Christian church on a Sunday, whether it's Roman Catholic or Church of England, this amount of people who are conversing, these should be filled out to the doors, and they're not.
No. Well, what does that tell you, my friend?
Well, they're finding a loophole, and any loophole, to remain in this country.
What do we do, lastly, for the genuine ones, as Julian was saying that there are, the other caller, how do we look after them, the genuine cases?
Look, as you said, there is a genuine one, but the quota that we were talking about, it doesn't correlate, you know. And as you said, if you had someone who's genuinely saying, I've had, a road to Damascus moment, you can tell pretty quick, because they'd be studying the Bible, the way they speak, you know, about their experiences.
I'm with you on that, Paul. Thank you for that. You had the last word of the day. Just to tell you, tomorrow we'll have a report on that Caer Philly election down in Wales, which, if the reports are to be true, there's a bit of a political earthquake happening down there. And we'll have a full report on that tomorrow. But I'm done for today. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can read and watch the latest from LBC. Put your news categories in the order that you want. Pause and rewind live radio. Listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. I'm done. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and it's like a blast from the past, isn't it? Boris Johnson is about to give evidence to the COVID inquiry, specifically about the impact on young people. And I don't think I need to tell you that he is not a politician that I hold in very high regard. No pleasure whatsoever in being 150% vindicated by his awfulness in office, because, of course, it's the country that suffers, and most obviously, today, it's the young people that suffer. But I'm not sure how much blame you can lay at his feet for decisions made in haste and chaos that ensued. What I really want to talk about today is the actual impacts that period had on a number of issues that remain in the news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the government is facing growing pressure over Prince Andrew's titles and living arrangements. It's emerged he's not paid rent on his Windsor home for more than 20 years, as he faces new allegations from Virginia Giuffre. Her posthumous memoir went on sale this morning. LBC's Fraser Knight has more details.
It contains more damning details about the claims that Prince Andrew has always strongly denied. Miss Giuffre talks about three sexual encounters that she claims to have had with the royal after she was trafficked by the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. The first, Virginia Giuffre said, was when she was 17, when she claims to have been told, just like Cinderella, she was going to meet a handsome prince.
The government says Prince Andrew's titles remain an issue for Buckingham Palace. Boris Johnson is to be questioned about the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on children. The former Prime Minister will give evidence to the UK COVID-19 inquiry this morning. Public sector borrowing increased to more than £20 billion last month, the highest September figure for 5 years. The cost of debt interest, public services and benefits all increased compared with the year earlier. It piles further pressure on the Chancellor ahead of her budget next month. The Business Secretary, Peter Kyle, who's been speaking to LBC, has denied the country is broke under Labour.
Everything we have done has been within the fiscal rules so that the market can see that we are operating within very tight fiscal rules. And then in doing so, yes, we are investing into our economy, into the skills of our nation, into the innovation of our nation. We are finding ways to make sure that we can get our public services back on their feet, because all of this lays the foundation for economic growth.
The former French president Nicolas Sarkozy is starting a 5-year jail sentence. The 70-year-old, who has lodged an appeal, is being held in the isolation wing of the notorious La Santé prison in Paris. He was found guilty of conspiring to fund his election campaign with money from Libya's Colonel Gaddafi. And Sané Takaichi, who cites Margaret Thatcher as a key influence, has become Japan's first female prime minister. The 64-year-old, who's become known as Japan's Iron Lady, is the country's fourth leader in just 5 years. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 94.33. That's up 29. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for many places. The rain heaviest and most frequent in the northwest. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after ten. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I don't know whether you see any sort of warped symmetry here, but the former French president, Nicolas Sarkozy, has gone to jail this morning for conduct committed while in office. Boris Johnson, the former Prime Minister, has just sat down in front of the COVID inquiry, where history suggests he will attempt to obfuscate, fudge and bluster his way out of proper scrutiny. He may well not succeed, because some of his inquisitors are absolutely top drawer. I think Natasha's watching it for us, so we'll be catching up with events at that inquiry as and when they occur. I'm not the world's smartest man when it comes to sartorial observations. When I worked in menswear, I was. You can always spot someone who works in menswear. If you're ever wandering around town and you see somebody coming towards you who is absolutely impeccably turned out, up to and including the occasional excessive accoutrement, like a pocket watch with a chain draped across his waistcoat pockets, or a silk square in his top pocket, the chances are he works in a fancy menswear shop, because you get quite bored. And one of the things you can do when you get quite bored is dress up. But I no longer work in a fancy menswear shop, and I very, very, very rarely dress up. But my first thought on seeing Johnson shuffle into the building was he could have tucked his shirt in. Just a simple thing. He could have tucked his shirt in or ironed his jacket or put on something fresh from the dry cleaners, just by way of conveying how seriously you take the proceedings and how much respect you have for the people that you are talking about, whether they are still with us or not. But that's just me probably being a bit petty. Here's the thing, right? Just bear with me for a minute on this. There's a story in the news today about Labour considering the abolition of the minimum wage for youths. It's a possible and plausible claim that 16 to 24 year olds are being priced out of entry level jobs. Our minimum wage is comparatively high compared to other countries. It's not the highest, but it's higher than comparative economies. And this figure that you know I'm obsessed with, and I think it's
possibly the biggest story around at the moment. The only reason I hold back from saying that is because it's not entirely unprecedented. So when I tell you that 16 to 24-year-olds who are not signed up for anything, education, employment, training, are about to hit a million, the figure is about to hit a million, you're probably real. But then I tell you that it actually did hit a million in 2012. But that, of course, was in the aftermath of the global financial crisis and in the dog days of austerity. But it's not necessarily the abolition of minimum wage that we're going to talk about today. I just want you to hold the knowledge that there are a million people in that category now. A category I am absolutely obsessed with, partly perhaps because of my own children's age, although they are not in that category. They're just in that age group. And partly because, well, I'm one of those very odd fish who thinks that patriotism involves thinking about what's best for your country rather than painting roundabouts or putting up upside-down Union flags. I know, it'll never catch on, but if you really do understand what patriotic feelings are, it is about wanting what is best for the people in your country. The people. You can't really be patriotic about, in my view, about abstract concepts, but you can be patriotic about human beings, and you can want your neighbours, your friends, your fellow countrymen, and people helping to keep the good ship United Kingdom afloat, albeit that they may have been born somewhere. You want what's best for all of them. It's a desperately unfashionable position, but it's the only truly accurate description of patriotism that you're ever likely to encounter. And I find the idea, and I'm going to sound a bit pompous now, maybe, but I find the idea of a million people not doing anything every day, all day, absolutely heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking and frightening because of what it says about the future. And I'm not sure it's possible to separate the conversation that Boris Johnson will be having today with that figure. Think about AI and the conversations we've had about AI. Imagine you were 18, sitting there, surveying the future, knowing that if you actually went out and got a job, the prospect of ever owning your own home is pretty close to zero. And then, of course, not knowing whether the profession that you've decided to pursue or the job that you've decided to do would even exist in 10 years' time because of all the chatter about AI, which is reaching even the most blocked ears at the moment. Then you've got the existential worries, which you can be sympathetic with or not, but they're real and people worry about them, including the environment, including the rise of the far right, including the possibility that your family's going to be deported if Katie Lamb ever ends up in the Home Office or, God forbid, Downing Street. Then despite the fact that you're here legally, you've abided by all the rules you were required to abide by and you've contributed to this country in all manner of ways, you could easily be deported if politicians like that end up in power. Why would you start on the hamster wheel of life? Why would you start trying to climb up the ladder of life? So I can't separate those two phenomena. The idea that there are reasons why young people in this country today have, if not slipped through the cracks quite yet, then have, and I've got the language wrong in the past as well, because what word would you use here? What verb would you use here?